reach out.
3 o'clock.
Oh, absolutely. Just let me, I'll let you.
Okay, it's 3 o'clock, so I call the meeting to order on March 19th here, 3 o'clock. Agendas are all posted at all the right locations.
Yes, sir.
Where is Ms. Becky? Any public comment?
Do we have mosquito up, oh, there we go.
That's pretty empty.
I don't think the lights are on.
Acceptance of the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented. Second.
Okay, we got a move and a second. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting on February 19th.
I move we approve the minutes as presented.
Okay, we got a motion?
I'll second that.
Okay, we got a second. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? Any disapproval? At the end, just before we disperse out of this room, Ms. Christie wants a picture of the board and Mr. Cooper, so don't run off quickly. What about the attorneys?
I don't have anything at this time, Mr. Chairman, unless there's anyone with questions for me.
Okay. All right, management reports.
Well, we have Christie here that is representing the administration, so Christie, we'll go with you first.
Oh, wow. Go, Christie.
I'm sure Scott would love to do this, but he's cruising in the class, so. Administrative Services report for March, we're going to use cybersecurity just for February, and customer service stats will be for January and February. The last time those were reported on was December. Cybersecurity training, we're at 96% in February. The topics were.
Excuse me, I see you're falling down, though.
Yes.
Last year you were 98, now you're only 96.
Yes.
Have you identified the culprit?
I did ask today, and they have been identified, and their managers have been contacted.
But he's retiring, so.
I did mine, Byron. This is my last board meeting, and I have never missed a training.
He's talking about your clicking.
Okay, I did click bad once, but never missed a training.
Cybersecurity lesson for February was using strong authentication for strong passwords and multi-factor authentication. Prevent tailgating and disclosing vulnerabilities. Internal phishing results, we had zero clickers in February, so we improved from January. Emails, in February, we had 36,847. 2,655 of those were spam. Our firewall blocks by country, it seems that Romania came in top with a close following by the Netherlands.
Canada.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that's not higher. They're really mad right now.
Server system uptime, we were up 100% of the time. Data backup and restore, we're at 100% as well. The EISAC sent 82 emails in February about threats. There were 3 top security patterns, phishing and social engineering attacks, brute force and credential attacks, and physical and insider threats to infrastructure. More details of these are out on the drive in your board folder for you to peruse those closer if you'd like. This is another slide that Scott added this time. It's ongoing projects by the IT team. It's in addition to the regular duties to actively advance several key projects to enhance operational efficiency, security, and infrastructural reliability. And below is a list of those items. He did put that out in your drive as well. Helpful.
Guess that's the end of the report.
I'm done. All right, we'll move into customer service. New automatic bill pay customers. We had 54 sign up in January, 23 sign up in February. That brings our total up to 10,306 customers that are using automatic bill pay, which is 54.82% of our customers. New customers on e-bill, we had 80 in January and 98 in February. That brings our total to 6,169 customers that are using our e-billing, and that is 32.8% of our customers. The number of calls that we took, we had 1,298 calls in January, 1,207 calls in February. Average on wait, on hold wait time is between seven and eight seconds, which is about industry standard, and we typically stay within that range. Average talking time is a little bit over 2.5 minutes per call. The average is a little bit deceiving because there are calls that can last 30 to 45 minutes, but when you average it over the total number of calls, that is kind of deceptive on the amount of time that we talk on the phone. Total walk-in customers, we had 2,111 in January, 1,999 in February. Now we'll go into our social media and website. We're kind of staying level on our OPD5 website. We had 3,900 active users in January and 3,800 in February.
Does that mean that many people logged into their account?
That's that many people hit something on our website page. It's not necessarily the customer service portal.
Okay.
It's the news, the newsletters, forms, applications, things like that, that it records those entries. So this isn't the customer service portal. This is in addition. Average engagement time, 38 seconds and 37 seconds. So it doesn't look like they stay very long. Mm-hmm. Social media for Instagram, we had 5 new followers in January, 3 new followers in February. We now have a total of 540 Instagram followers. Our reach for January was 281, and our reach for February is 231. The reach is the number of customers that actually saw our post, whether it was in their own feed or if they clicked on our page. We had 25 posts across our social media in January. I know it only says Facebook, but it's where we match all the way across the board now. So there are 25 in February, in January, and 15 in February. New Facebook followers, we had 14 in January. We had 6 in February. For a total of, well, this is just our reach, 3,800 in January, 2,800 in February. That's, again, anyone who saw a post on our feed. Facebook followers, we are actually down to 4,398. We had new followers during the month, but we also had people that unfollowed us. And that is the end of our report, unless you have any questions.
I do have something for our attorney. I got an email from you, and it said invitation to the meetings.
Oh,
and I clicked on it, and it was blocked on my system. It said, potentially dangerous website. Don't go there.
I didn't send you any invitation.
I got one from you, too.
Uh-oh.
But I figured it was probably
anyway, I just wanted to let you know. It said invitation to the meeting, and I thought maybe you were having a special party.
That was one of the attacks that they're doing that is listed on the EISAC report.
They got him. He's the bad guy.
So on that first slide, what was the thing that you talked about, tailgating? What is that?
Tailgating is where, let's say, someone comes into this store over here, an old person, it would be someone that's not supposed to be in here, but then comes through on through by either sneaking or, let's just say, friend of Coop, maybe 10 years ago, says, hey, how are you doing? And walks in along with them without getting any...
without swiping a card.
...security card or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
It's like holding the elevator door and letting in the stranger.
Thank goodness.
Okay, thank you, Christy. Randall, let's go to engineering.
Okay, I just have one item to report. We have a developer who has funded our studies for the Moab area, for the large projects. We'll start those studies. Well, we actually started them last week. We have 30 to 90 days to provide those studies, and that will determine what they're going to do in the Moab area, what they decide on which size projects they're going to be able to do and going forward. So in a few months, I'll be able to report on the progress that they will happen. These are the large projects.
Is it like a housing development or?
There's several large projects up there. Large. So the studies that we're submitting will for up to a gigawatt of capacity to NV Energy. So.
Any updates on the, have they started on the line across the Mesa?
No, we're just finishing up on the 138 line in Mesquite, the Raptor line. Uh-huh. And then now they're actually decided to also place the tangent poles. Even though we don't have everything for them, they're going to place those while they have the auger there digging. So they're going to start doing those probably tomorrow. And then they're going to move on to the Gila.
So the insulators and your equipment, it's all ready?
For that line, yes. We haven't received insulators for the Taurus to Gila line yet. Those are due at the end of this month. That's
okay.
What I have.
Thank you, Randall. We don't have a line operations report. Most of our lines operations people are at the NREA Best Practices event in Las Vegas today. So we're going to go to Kevin for the substation operations report.
Okay. You're getting a new artist.
All right. So our metering department had a report of a low voltage problem at a house. And so they deployed some recording meters that we have to that house and the neighbor's house and got that recording. And yes, it did have a low voltage dip at a, you know, every now and then it dipped down the voltage. So they moved that one of the meters across the street just to make sure that neighborhood, and it was doing it across the street, the house across the street too. So then they started checking back. That kind of led back to telling them, hey, that possibly something with the transformer or the overhead high voltage. And so they did some investigating. The line crew did some investigating and found that the connection on the high voltage riser was loose. And so they repaired that connection and resolved the problem. So that's just something that the metering department does, is places that recording meter. So I just want to report on that.
Can you do that with the old meters or just the Saclara system?
So what it is you pull the meter off, pop this recording base in, and you put the meter back on the house, and it's only closed in that meter base. So with that, it records everything, and then they can come by with a computer, and it reads it through, I think it's Bluetooth, and they can read all that information on their laptop back from that recording device, and then they can take it and analyze it back in the office.
So on that note, my parents are actually having the same issue, and so your staff has come over and kind of, I don't know, my dad's a slipping breaker for what he's doing, but anyway, I really appreciate it because my parents are 83 years old, they have no idea what's going on. And so kudos to your staff because they've been on top of that pretty well, you know. My parents are old, and so I really appreciate Shannon and those guys coming in there. They've been pretty on top of it, so
good.
I appreciate that.
And I think they got that resolved.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you. Substation crew, so we've had transformers down for various reasons. Oil processing, we finished oil processing a couple weeks ago. We've done some sub-maintenance, and we've also been pulling in some cable into the Mesquite substation for upgrades on some of those lines that were too small. Excuse me. And while they're de-energized, the sub crew likes to likes to test all the equipment there. So things that they test is transformers, breakers, reclosers, etc. And all of the transformers that they did have to energize, they tested before they re-energized them. But this is to make sure that they don't have any, we don't have any maintenance needs that they need to take care of, and to make sure everything is operating correctly. Well, in Mesquite substation, sorry, I'm choking on something.
Do I need to get the defibrillator?
Maybe. Can you go get that for me? Call 911 at the same time.
Her dream has come true.
So Mesquite recloser failed to do the power factor test, failed at Mesquite A recloser. And that is kind of the problem they think could have been the failure for that is the vacuum bottles inside the recloser. And what those vacuum bottles do is they snuff that arc. Thanks. they snuff that arc when it operates a high current fault. And so without that vacuum in there, you can imagine that recloser could let the smoke out. We don't want that to happen. So they found we have new reclosers that we could have replaced it with, but this substation is scheduled to be torn down and rebuilt within the next couple of years. So they didn't want to put a new one in there. So they found an older one that tested out good, and then they rewired it back in. And then as of, I think yesterday, everything was fully tested and returned back to service. So that's back online.
But what substation is that?
It's the one downtown. It's Mesquite Substation. It's down on Arrowhead Lane.
Mm-hmm. Right by Craig Pulsifer's house.
Yeah.
Craig Pulsifer is behind.
Casablanca. Yeah, this one is down by...
It's next to Craig's house.
Yeah. This one's the one that we're going to rename Arrowhead when we rebuild this. Mm-hmm. But you can see on the left-hand side, that's the new recloser that they put in, and the one on the right is the one that failed. But you can see all that lattice work and all of that stuff. The new substation, all of that stuff will go away. So we purchased three transformers last week, two for Arrowhead, then one for Falcon Ridge. The total of those three transformers is $4.6 million. We purchased that transformer for Raptor Substation at $900,000 3 years ago. So just kind of a comparison to how much things have gone up. Those three, if we would have bought three of those, it would have been $2.7 million compared to the $4.6 million. So that just gives you an idea of how much things have increased.
Is it still within budget, though?
Yes. No.
That's sort of the answer.
Take your choice.
We're also going to replace one of our big transmissions transformers at Tortoise. And that one's come in. That peel will be cut next week. And the cost for that is $4.6 million for one transformer. It's going to be one of the biggest transformers on our system. There's one that's going to be a sister to it that's already we already have on the system.
Are those 125?
They're 120 base, so they'll do 200 or 225 for their max. But all of the studies that we've had done and the trending we've seen, we'll need that transformer about 5 years. And if there's any industrial load that increases, we'll need it quicker. So the lead time for those transformers are close to 3 years, so we thought we'd better get on the ball and get it purchased now. So
3 years.
Any questions?
Yeah. Last month you told us that they were processing oil and going through some of the transformers, and I can't remember the details, but it seemed like there was some problems, maybe some paper or something was going bad, and they were going to try to salvage that. I just wondered if you had some reports on that, or if they're
going to,
now they wait and see.
It's a wait and see thing now. They'll process all that, get all the water out of the oil, and the water is what deteriorates the paper. So they get all that out, and hopefully it extends the life of those transformers.
Okay, so we won't know anything
couple of years. We'll get test reports on it in October, and then again in the next October, we'll trend those and see what our numbers are looking like. But it's a few year process before we actually know what's going on with it. So.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Jonathan, would you like to give our financial report, please?
All right, thank you. We'll begin with our statement of operations. We finished this month, so we'll begin our operating revenue and patronage capital on line one. In column D, this month our revenue was $4,591,000. Our line three cost of purchase power, $2,643,000. The line 20 total cost of electric service, $3.9 million. And then our 22 interest received on investments was $83,000, which brings us to our line 29 patronage capital and margins of $691,926 for February. So a little bit better than last month.
That was a negative five or something?
Yeah, 586. Yeah.
So we're about even, huh?
Yeah, about even. So if you look at column D or column B, we're at 178 for the year. That does include, just going forward, our cost of purchase power on line three. We won't have our total, or I guess our final Tenasca bill ever for our meetings. So that's an estimate, as last month was an estimate also, and also our NV Energy transmission lines were an estimate, same as this month. But we were in January over just around $35,000 over, so it was fairly close estimate. Our $3.6 million was our total line three cost for purchasing power. So we're pretty dang close. So I think that will be pretty close going forward, but that doesn't include in that estimate. So, yes, if we have any questions? That segment of operations.
I noticed for line three now, this year was 6.2 and the estimate was 6.6, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're running a little under, but we didn't make more money. I mean, the difference in money there, is about $400,000.
But right.
We only had 178,000.
Right. So what we budgeted for this or for this month, I guess a year to date is what we're looking at there. So we are down. Cost was down about 400,000, yes, from what we were, and yeah. So our revenue is still a little bit lower than what our actual books are. That's why our net margins aren't as high as.
And I would attribute that to the weather. We had a fairly warm February, and with it being warmer, people aren't using their heaters as much, so we didn't have as much revenue as we would typically have. We were about 6 degrees warmer than last year at this time.
So we budgeted $9.6 million in revenue, and we've received $9 million. So it's about $600,000 difference. Our cost of power is almost exactly on. And last month, we were high on our cost of power that very first month. We didn't get as much hydro, and I think we just needed to get the scheduling dialed in, and this month we did. So.
Okay. Well, we were just concerned about the margin. Yeah.
Same.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Our balance sheet, our line five net utility plant, we closed with a value of $144 million. On line eight, we have investments in associated organizations at $3.6 million. Then our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 materials and supplies, which brings us to a total value of our line 29 assets and other debits of $190 million. Then on the liabilities and equity side, line 36 are total margins and equities, total of 128 million. We have our long-term debt on line 43, line 48 accounts payable, and our line 57 total liabilities and other credits at 190 million, just over. So at the top, we have the detail of our cash held in our checking accounts. We closed with a month-ending balance of $4,960,000. Our cash and investments held in our Morton account valued at $24,269,000, and our Goldman account at $629,000. And then our year-to-date dividends for interest on the override. And the detail of our securities held in the Morton account by security type and duration here in the pie graph and the bar, pie chart and bar graph. So as of February 28th, OPD has a total of 18,839 customers, which represents an increase of 59 from the prior month. So our ratios, our modified debt service coverage ratio with estimates through the end of the year is 1.85. Our equity is a percentage of assets, 67%. And then our times interest earned ratio, this is a year-to-date figure and not estimated throughout the end of the year, so currently it's at 1.63. Connection fees. In January, we were a little low, but in February, we received 48 connection fees valued at $46,354. In our current billing arrangements, we have 43 residential customers valued at just over $8,000 and no commercial customers at this time. And then our roundup program has, continues to go strong in both valleys there. So our loans held with CFC, our next quarterly payment is due at the end of this month in the amount of $1,484,000. Our total outstanding loan value is $46,617, and our average interest rate after discounts on our loans is 3.35%. So here's the detail of our revenue by customer class, and then down at the bottom we have that enlarged on this next slide here. So again, our February customer total 18,839 on line 10 there in the February column down towards the bottom. Our monthly cost of power was 8.5 cents, our monthly revenue 11.74, and our 2025 average cost of power was 8.59. Those are averages from year to date.
Can I just interrupt for one sec? I'm sorry, you go first.
Oh, I'll go first? Okay. The previous slide, I can't understand that at all. I really appreciate the second slide, which is important, I think, to us. Maybe you're using it for something else, but in my opinion, you can just forget that and show us the next slide, because it has I think the critical information we need, if we want to look up that, I guess we can go online and see it.
Yeah. And that's basically
just a suggestion.
That's basically why we include it.
I think there is real value on this slide. I understand not showing it here, but otherwise then he does two reports. So he just puts this so that you can see it before. So one of the things that is of value on this is that this is a breakdown by customer class.
Yeah, it doesn't actually.
No, sir. That just tells you the total customers. So if you'll go back, Jonathan, this shows you on customer class. So if we were to lose one of our large industrial or large commercial loads, you would see that there, and you would see that trend down.
I'm sorry. My comment was only meant for this meeting because, I can't, to be honest with you, my eyes are good to see it enough. And if I want to know where to find it, it's on the website under reports. Mm-hmm. And
I was just suggesting you might want to just show us the second one, because that's, unless there's something on that that jumps out at you and you want to tell us about it. You know, some change or something that we ought to know about.
If you'll go to the next one.
Sorry to bug you.
No.
What I was going to say is we signed our Tenasca contract at $87.70 per megawatt. So if you see that our monthly cost for February was at $85 even, that's a blend with our hydro. So one of the things that that really indicates is that we're buying a lot of power from Tenasca. We're not blending that hydro as we have, and we're still receiving some of that layoff. But I think we can still dial in hydro a little bit better, and we'll see water flow for March and April should come up, so that will help. But the other thing that we will really see a difference is if we say our prayers and eat our vitamins, that the solar comes on in July, then we will blend that $34.70 power there, and that will drastically change that monthly cost.
And
so,
still scheduled for July, as far as we know?
As far as we know, yes. We just, Randall had a meeting with them a couple weeks ago, and they said they are on track.
While you're on this one, so I see we were at 8.69, now we're at 8.5. Is part of that like scheduling, or is that mostly, I guess my question is, in July when we're using a lot more power, well, before solar goes on, is that going to, does more power we use make that go down, or has it really influenced us?
For monthly costs, it'll go up. Because the more we buy, the more we have to buy from Tenasca. You get to use less hydro. We have a certain allocation of hydro, and anything that we need above that must be purchased from Tenasca.
Go up because the percent of hydro.
Yes.
Will be
the, because the hydro is the same. Yep.
But the solar will hopefully go.
Correct. Yep. We'll go from 23% of our portfolio up to about 36% when solar is fully on. So that. That helps.
I guess, pun intended, when we buy more from Tenasca, it dilutes our hydropower.
Water.
It's his last meeting. We got to let him get them all in. Sorry, Jonathan. Keep going. We're railroading you here.
No, that concludes my presentation, unless y'all have any additional questions.
I think that one more. I might should have asked Kevin, but when do we get to pay for his new toys, transformers? Is that already?
Well, starting
next month.
Yeah. So is it all at once? $9 million right up front, or
they do it in increments. So when you sign the PO, it's 30%. When they send us the blueprints and drawings, it's another 30%. And then when they ship it, it's 40%. So
the blueprints 2 years away or
26 weeks.
They're cheap, so they'll make that right away.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan.
Okay.
Me, Lisa, let's go to your report.
Okay. I reported to you guys that Carolyn Turner had garnered her notice to NREA, and we hired Lisa Levine as the new executive director. She came out at the end of February because OPD-5 handles all of the benefits for NREA. And so Lisa came out here and signed all of her paperwork with Kelly and then was able to take a system tour with Mendes and I. Lisa is going to be a wonderful addition to NREA. I feel like Carolyn has incredibly large shoes to fill, and we don't expect for Lisa to replace Carolyn, but I think that Lisa is going to do wonderful things for our state. I'm very, very excited for our future. Vernon?
I will say that I met her at the thing, and she seemed very confident and sort of really in charge sort of person, so certainly backing up your comments.
Today, Mendes and I made a quick trip to Las Vegas as it was the best practices, and we did a farewell for Carolyn. And Carolyn was in the corner getting herself together after her speech, and we were getting ready to take a picture. And Lisa, who had met some of us only in her interview, she just whipped every one of those CEOs into shape. Get up on the stage. You're over here. You scoot, like, without a moment's hesitation. So she's going to do great. Very good.
But she is shorter.
She is tiny. She's tiny but mighty. You could see that. Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Well, you know about short girls, right?
No pun intended.
Hey, listen, it's Mendes' show. Keep your jokes, okay. Vernon and I have been in contact with many of our state representatives. We have sent a follow-up to Public Power Day to every representative that we interacted with in Carson City. And then we have also been in contact with Congresswoman Susie Lee and her staff and Congressman Mark Amaday. Both of those guys serve on the House Appropriations Committee, and the Bureau of Reclamation is looking for appropriations to do a study of a thermal curtain. Mendes has reported to you guys a number of times about the cold shower effect that they're trying to give to the smallmouth bass in the Colorado River. They now have come up with the idea of putting in a thermal curtain that would allow cold water to flow under but keep the fish from flowing through the dam. And so we wrote a letter in support of those appropriations for that. I know, but yes, we sent a letter in support of the appropriations.
Sideline.
You know, they're letting people go. I haven't heard, I've only heard of one scientist being let go.
Yeah, that's what kills me.
Yeah.
We also have been in contact with Congressman Amaday because he has co-sponsored the Endangered Species Amendment of 2025. They are doing an amendment to the Endangered Species Act that was from 1973. That is co-sponsored with a number of representatives that we know, Celeste Malloy from Utah, Doug Malafa from California. There was a number of them. I'm forgetting some of them, but there were a number of them, and Congressman Amaday put his name on that bill as well, and so we thanked him for that and then offered to be of any assistance that we can in that process. There is two bills right now in the Nevada legislature that NREA is following that we give you an update on. One is a bill that the AG's office is pushing that is banning of price gouging. And the reason that that is on our radar is that it has an amendment that includes telecommunication services and household utilities, and the only exemption is for those that are covered under the PUC. So we're monitoring that closely. There hasn't been any movement on that bill since it went to the first hearing on March 5th. But NREA has reached out to the AG's office and asked to be a part of those conversations. So we'll keep you up to date on that one. There's also AB 70, and that was sponsored by the Growth and Infrastructure Committee, and it is with the Nevada Association of Counties. And it would require written comments of a board of county commissioners upon the receipt of application for any partial abatement of certain taxes from renewable energy facilities. So in other words, the counties, and it's rural counties, that Washoe and Clark are supporting this, saying they should have they should have input when those entities are wanting to come into rural areas and asking for those tax abatements. We will be, again, monitoring this, and we're in support of having say on where those things go in rural communities. So March 17th, which was Monday, was the deadline for the legislator bill introductions. March 24th is the committee bill introductions deadline. And then we will have on April 11th is the first committee passage deadline. April 22nd is the first House passage deadline. And June 2nd, the session ends. So as we go through these next few weeks, we'll be sending out any updates that we need on bills that could be of concern, and we will be ready to hotfoot it to Carson City if needed.
I noticed that some of the activist groups will send out a letter to their members, as you're sitting, asking them to write in, too. Mm-hmm. You can do that. I mean, I guess
me writing in that maybe doesn't make a difference, but if there's, you know, 40 or 50 people or 100 people write in, it seems like that might make a little difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if either of these become a big concern to us, then we would absolutely, I mean, I think there's power in grassroots communications.
Of course, yeah.
But right now, we're just monitoring it, and Carolyn and Lisa have, they're on the, it's under their thumb, so they're keeping a close eye on that one. On the congressional side, NRECA and APPA are tracking some bills. There is a couple that I think that would be of interest to you guys. The HR 2073 is the Defending Our Dams Act, and this would prohibit the use of federal funds to allow or to study the breach or alteration of the Lower Snake River dams and prevents the Army Corps of Engineers from carrying out spillage operations at any of the Lower Snake River dams without prior approval from BPA. So, of course, we'll be keeping a close eye on that as well, and we receive regular updates from NRECA on this. And then HR 2074 would prohibit the breaching of federally operated dams if the breach would result in an increase in carbon emission by more than 5%, would negatively impact navigation for commerce, or would result in an increase of at least 5% of the cost of goods being shipped. So, that 5% carbon emission increase is going to be key in that. We will be monitoring that closely.
Do you know, like, is that in that region or in the United States or those percentages? Do you know where they're based out of?
Well, where the replacement would have to be located, I don't know that. I don't know if it would have to be located in that exact same area, but if they're removing power in that area, they would have to replace power or be able to transmit it to there. And if it's 5%,
so replacement power, if it's 5% more, mm-hmm, carbon or whatever. Okay. Mm-hmm.
They had in the NRAC magazine that just came out, it had some big articles on the Ford Dam breaching going on. You know, it talked about the 3,000 megawatts of capacity, mm-hmm, those dams are capable of, and it talked a lot about, you know, talked about the water spillage. You know, 80% of the water doesn't go through the turbines to go for the fish ladders and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And so they're discussing how they can limit that to produce more power.
Internally, just a couple of updates. All employee committees have been reorganized and all members have been seated in their new roles. I have met with the Safety Committee and the Wage and Benefit Committee and given them my expectations of their deliverables and the directions that I want to see those committees moving towards. We currently have a total of 9 committees that are all with a we have a minimum of 2 managers and then anywhere from 3 to 5 employees of different ranking order on those committee. The responsibilities of some of those committees range from construction standards to emergency response and preparation, transmission and distribution planning, employee engagement, like I said, safety, wages and benefits. And I'm excited to see what will come from these groups. We have good employees that are excited to be a part of these committees. And whenever we get those great minds in a room, they always do good stuff for us. So
how does that work? Is that some from each valley or
yes, it is. And it depends on the type of committee. So for wages and benefits, we have 2 managers and then we have a representative from every single department. And so then you would have one, some from Mesquite and some from the Overton. But then we would also, we try to, wages and benefits, we try to be conscientious of where they are in their career, because somebody who is in their second year of their career wants different benefits than somebody who's in their 28th year of their career. And so we mixed that longevity as well. Transmission and distribution planning, that typically is only including engineering and operations folks, because they're the people that contribute the most to those conversations. And then when we have a large project that we're working on, a lot of times we'll bring in another couple of people who don't have a ton of experience in those areas, because they bring a different insight to that department, so, or that committee. At the end of February, a group of us met with the Mesquite Fire Chief and his staff at the Emergency Operations Center. And that gave us an opportunity to tour their facility and then also talk through the processes before needing to actually do it in an emergency situation. Something that I was concerned about, that I kind of wondered, when you drive by on Main Street, you look and there's, I think, four parking stalls beside that building. And I thought, in case of an emergency and everybody's going to meet here, where are we going to park? Well, come to find out, they have a parking lot at the library with a gate that they would open and everybody would park over there and be able to walk through a back. But those are the kinds of things that's nice to know when it's not in the middle of an emergency. And so we toured their entire facility. We talked about what would be our responsibilities, where we would go, how we would communicate, and what our internal processes are, and then where the Emergency Operations Center fits into that. We also had a great talk with them about trainings that we can provide to them, to both emergency response for fire and ambulance. And we had a great discussion about that, because one of the things that we highlighted was they are so trained that when they see somebody in danger, to rush in and help them. And what we want to make sure is that when they see that there's a car crashed into one of our switches and they want to rush to help them, that we've trained them to wait until we ensure that that switch has been de-energized. Because the last thing that they want to do is try to rescue one of their own who's also been electrocuted. So we had a great talk about that. We also set up a plan to go in and do some tabletop exercises with them, because there's just value in running through some of those scenarios when it's not in the emergency situation. And so we will be doing that a couple times this year, both at the EOC and then bringing them here for some of our trainings. I attended the NRECA Power Exchange and Tech Advantage in Atlanta. We had Randall joined me from staff, and then we had Jack and Randy and Mike and Rich that all joined. We enjoyed a 3-hour time change to Eastern time on top of a 1-hour spring forward time change. So that made my 5 a.m. wake-up call very interesting on the first day. I attended a pre-conference workshop called Boardroom Challenges, Connecting Government's Theory with Action. And this course focused on the culture of communication, constructive dialogue, and a working relationship with each other and with the CEO. And we reviewed how to define if problems are an oversight responsibility or an operational responsibility. This was really informative to me. I enjoyed this class. One of the things that we did was they made it very interactive. We all broke into groups of five and sat around a table, and then we acted as a board. And so then we were given a scenario, and the names were changed to protect the innocent. But every scenario that they gave us had happened in our industry. So they gave us a scenario, and then we had to say, what are the governance issues in this scenario? And to me, I thought that, well, this is going to be easy. So the very first issue was that a board member was representing the board on an individual basis on social media. And so you have to define the problem. You have to say, what is the governance issue there? Well, to me, I'm like, well, let's just jump in and fix it. Let's call the person and say, stop talking on social media. You can't represent the board. But that's not the governance issue. The governance issue is, do you have a policy that directs board members on whether or not they can represent the board on an individual basis? So it made you take a step back and look at that. And then the next step was, once you fix the governance issue, what is the operational issue and what's the dividing line? What should the board be doing and what should they be telling the CEO to do? So it was very good. We went through a number of, I think there were 7 scenarios we went through, and just a very, very good class. We got a lot out of that. I also went to Leading the Way, Powering Your Cooperative into the Future, and I was so excited about this class because the description looked incredible. And I got there, and it was a sales pitch for the NRECA's survey that they give to employees, where they come in and they survey all of your employees to say, what is your culture? What is your issue? So we listened for about an hour on how that worked for a utility. And I did sit through the entire class, but it was not what I had expected or hoped for. I also went to the excess liabilities market and the transition to the one-year policies with Federated. Our insurance industry as a whole is really changing, and the wildfires in the western United States are changing that drastically. We've always had wildfires, but now they are so catastrophically expensive. So it seems like every year we are having a hurricane on the East Coast and a wildfire on the West Coast, and it's changing the dynamics of that industry greatly. Everybody's aware of the State Farm issues in California, and that's just going to continue on. I don't know how they're going to rein that in, but with those issues come cost increases. That's just the way it's going to be. So,
can we lobby or something to get? I mean, we don't have nearly the fuel anywhere in our. I mean, maybe on the river, but. Mm-hmm. We just don't have the risk that a lot of those places have. But I don't want to get lumped in with them.
Yeah.
Do we have any lobbying for that?
Well, I think we had a gentleman who stood up in that class and said, wildfires aren't a risk for me. I don't have that. I live in Kansas, and wildfires aren't a risk, and so why do my rates have to increase? And they reminded him that the people in the western United States that have wildfires very rarely have catastrophic hailstorms that Kansas does, in fact, have. And so those things are regionally based. Pricing is regionally based, but we are on the West Coast. So can we send a letter and ask to be, excluded from some of that? Possibly. Do I think that it's really going to change anything? Not really.
You still have to do your fire report either way.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a good class, and I think Federated is a great company, and I really like Mr. Irwin, who is their CEO. I think he does a good job. He's very honest and straightforward, and he says over and over again, we are not an insurance company. We are a safety company. Their main concern is the safety of the employees, because that's the large payouts that they hate to do. So I went to the Wheel of Disruption, the NRECA resolutions meeting. That was nice for me to see come to fruition, as I represented us in Region 9 on that committee, putting forward those resolutions. I also attended the Women in Power class, which was how to advocate the power and the power of asking. And then, just to sum this up, we had some really great speakers. We had Jim Matheson and Louis Finkel and Tony Anderson, all dignitaries from NRECA, that spoke. We had Damon John from Shark Tank was our, I see Rich's face. He was one of our keynote speakers. And he started the first well-known hip-hop clothing brand. So while his story was very interesting, and he has rose, to be a multi-billionaire, very, very well-known guy, and now a large TV personality. His story did not necessarily resonate with the 8,000 people that were at the NRECA's power exchange, but I found him to be enjoyable. They also had Ben and Aaron Napier from the HGTV program Hometown, and they talked about how to invigorate and bring things into your community. And I thought it was great, because when that was over, one of their takeaways was find people's strengths in your community and then have them speak to it. If you know somebody who's really good at getting people to get something done, reach out to them. And so while we waited for our Uber, Shelley Jones took the opportunity to give Randall the talk of all of the things that he could do for the community that he's very good at. And he very politely and very sternly said no. So it was one of the highlights of the... And then just the last speaker... was the Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke. Leslie Rollins came in and did a talk on Wednesday morning. She was great. I thought she did a very, very good talk. She's a good speaker and did a lot of, you know, God bless the co-ops, God bless America. I felt like it was a good closing. So that was a good conference. It's always big. The Power Exchange is a lot of people trying to go to a lot of classes and try to manage all of that. But I think that it's good stuff, and it's very good networking. So I hope you guys will put that on your calendar. If you can't make the Power Exchange, at least make the regionals, because I think that those are same quality of speakers but on a smaller scale. So that concludes my report, unless you guys have questions for me.
Where is Region 9 this next year?
I want to say Bellevue, Washington.
I think that's right.
And it's in September instead of October this year. Or no, that's backwards. It's October.
It's October, so we moved NREA. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. NREA is September, and Region 9 is, I'm not aware, but it's the
6th
through the
8th
of October.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Bellevue. I'm going to give some remarks in my closing report, but there's a couple of things that I wanted to talk to you about, just to also piggyback on Melissa's report. I talked to Carolyn today. Her last day with NREA will be next Friday, so she's nearing the end. I also had a good talk with Lisa, asked Lisa if she was ready to take over, and she is a fireball. She's ready to go, so she bossed us around and is ready to go, so I think she'll do great. I think as I was talking to Carolyn, Carolyn said, she says, I couldn't have picked a better person than Lisa. She says, you guys really nailed the hire on that. So we're excited to work with her. I don't know how many of you listened to Donald Trump's report to Congress, or at least part of it. It was quite a lengthy report. But during his report, he was talking about some of the things or some of the places where money was wasted on. And he made a comment about so many millions of dollars being wasted on lavish fish. Well, 2 days later, we had a CRETA meeting, and we were talking about this, and we were thinking, what is he talking about, lavish fish? And after about 10 minutes of discussion, our lobbyist thinks, he says, I think maybe he was talking about larval fish in the Grand Canyon. He was referencing that. And so after some discussion, we think that's what he meant, was larval fish. He was talking about the waste on scientists and science and the Grand Canyon. So that's nice. He may not be able to pronounce it correctly, but he's aware of the problem. So that's a good step, I guess. One of the other things I wanted to let you know is last month I reported that our snowpack in the upper Colorado River Basin was at 80% of normal. We have had a couple of good storms come through. And as of today, that snowpack is at 88% of normal. At this point, it's, you know, the runoff starts mid-April. I don't think there's, at least the Bureau of Reclamation people don't think there's any way possible for us to even get 100% or even near that. They said we may get into the low 90s with a couple more storms. It's kind of interesting. We've had a lot of storms go through that northern area, but they've all been just north of the Colorado River Basin. They're up in, the storms have laid lots of snow up in Wyoming, along the Colorado, along the Continental Divide. So most of that runoff from that snow, some of it's 180% of normal. That runoff will go into the Columbia River Basin or the Missouri River and then into the Mississippi River. But it's just a little too far north from us. So they got some good snow, we didn't. So we will probably have a lean year. As we talked about this last time, they're emphasizing the fact that the soil conditions are very dry and that even with 88% of normal, we won't see anything near 88% because a lot of that will be absorbed into the ground. So it's going to be a poor water year. So we'll be prepared for that. And then just one last thing. We talked, it was mentioned earlier about some of the layoffs. There was a person that's been to most of our CRETA meetings that we're very familiar with, that we've worked with quite a bit. He was on the hit list for being terminated. He went ahead and took the buyout package, and so we've lost a really good person from WAPA that was really helpful due to this cutback. So that's going to hurt us a little bit, but hopefully WAPA will be able to fill the gap and continue to work with us on the things where we need help. And that's my report, unless you have any questions for me.
Does Gail still work with the young man?
Yes. Yeah, she does. And Gail, I've been on the legislative committee for CRETA, and I've got Gail now on that legislative committee so that she'll be able to sit in and have some input for Nevada. So that'll be a good, she'll be a good representative for us.
All right, excellent. So, H, review and possible acceptance for the annual audit report by Haven, Butner, Evan, Graff.
Okay, we'll turn this over to Melissa.
So tonight, we are excited to have Jenna Sheehan here with us. She helped perform our audit with Jonathan and the remainder of his staff. We have both Jonathan and Kim is here in case there is any accounting questions. She is ready, willing, and able to answer anything that you could possibly want to know. And she's thrilled that I'm announcing that. So I'm going to turn it over to Jenna. Welcome, Jenna. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. My name is Jenna Sheehan. I am from Haven Buckner. I don't know if you're familiar with Kevin. He's done the audit several years. He was supposed to be here, but he chipped a tooth, and they could get him on Wednesday afternoon, so you get me. I was part of the audit. I am familiar with everything, so that makes me feel better, but I am a new face. So we're going to look at the financial statements for the years ended in December 31st, 2024. One nice thing about your report is it does have 2023 figures, so you can step comparison, but we really are just going to focus on 2024. I'm not going to read verbatim this whole report. That would be lengthy and boring for all of you. So I'm just going to hit a few key points. On this first page, the opinions, this kind of talks about what's the auditor's responsibility and what's management's responsibility. So an auditor's responsibility is we are to make sure that the financial reports are presented in a fair manner, in all material respects, and that the financial position of Overton Power District is represented as it should be. So what we do is we conduct our audit in accordance with the auditing standards, and then, so that's basically what our responsibilities are. Management's responsibilities are to prepare those financial statements and ensure that they have a fair presentation. So how do we audit these financial statements? We want to obtain a reasonable assurance about whether they are whole, free from material misstatement, whether due to fraud or error, and to issue an audit report that includes our opinions. You hop over to the next page. This kind of talks about what we do. So these are just a big overview of what we do. When we come in, we exercise professional judgment and maintain professional skepticism. So we come in here, we're not coming in here to dig into every single thing, but we're honestly coming in here to see what, not in a fraud way, but what are they doing that they could do a little bit better? Where are things from an outside perspective that maybe they haven't missed? We also want to obtain an understanding of internal controls. Is there one person that has too much power? And those kind of things, do they have things that will protect the district? Then we also want to evaluate the appropriateness of accounting policies, And then we summarize all of it in our conclusion and what our opinion is. So on, I'm going to skip over to the next page. This right here is the management discussion and analysis. So the management, your management team actually wrote this up, but I do want to touch on the financial highlights because I do think those are very important. So your net utility plant increased by 20.8 million in 2024. So that's fantastic. Net position increased by 12.5 in 2024. Your net contributions in aid of construction went down by 21,000. Your principal long-term debt repayments totaled 3,962,000. And then when they do borrow for future capital projects, they are making sure the timing and interest of the markets are advantageous to the district. So those are just some important highlights that I thought they had pointed out that I also thought were good to point out to the board. The bottom of this just talks about kind of what all that means. I'm going to hop over to the next one. So we discussed net position and what that was for the year. The net position is a really good way to, is an indicator of an entity's financial position. So this is, if you're just going to look from a 1,000-foot view, this is kind of the first place you look to see what the district's financial position is. The assets exceeded liabilities by 121.7 million, which was an increase from the prior year of 12.6. A big part of that was in the utility plant. We will get more into that in these next following pages, but that is, you can see right there, the utility plant accounted for 140,304,000. So, and as you can see from 2022 and 2023, that has increased. So hopping over to the next page, and please stop me if you have any questions, just let me know. We'll dig more into that unit utility plant because that is where most of your assets are. 2024, your biggest increases were in the distribution plant at 108.544, and then under construction went up by 26.599. So those are where your heavy hitters were. Everything else remained pretty much consistent. And then long-term debt. Below there is a summary of the district's long-term debt. Your long-term debt has decreased by $3,962,000. Those are the payments that you've made, and they haven't acquired any more in the last year. Pension, I'm not going to dive a lot into this. I will tell you, we don't particularly come up with the pension numbers. We don't do much into it. What we do is we take the information from the Nevada website, put it in here. Our job is to make sure that you are expensing the correct amount and that you've got enough liability on there. I do want to point out that you are required to recognize the proportionate share of net position liability, but pension's kind of an odd thing, where we have to put it on the books as a liability, but the chance of that actually coming to fruition are very, very slim.
Just above zero.
But it is a little scary when you see those numbers, because the, and we'll dive into those in kind of further on, but I just wanted to point that out on the bottom of this page. It kind of describes it a little bit more. But those numbers can be a little daunting. Okay, and I'm actually going to hop over to the statements of net position. Okay. So we already kind of dug into your biggest difference from 2023, and that is the utility plant. You can see that's right there at the top. I'm not going to dig much more into that. And the next one I'm going to go to is the current assets. Your temporary investments, I'm just kind of going to go over the big differences. If you have any other questions on any of the numbers, please let me know. Temporary investments went down from the previous year. So your total current assets are $39,573,000. Your deferred outflows of resources went up from the previous year and is now $192,346,000. So liabilities, deferred inflows, and net position. Your current liabilities, the accounts payable has gone up, was $4,738,000. And so your total current liabilities is $16,398,135, and that's gone up from the previous year. However, if you look at your non-current liabilities, they've actually gone down to $54,000. $54,098,000. So they've kind of flip-flopped. Overall, your net position has gotten better. Again, we've already gone over this number, but at $140,304,000. So is there any questions that I can answer so far? I know, very exciting accounting numbers. So the next page is the statements of revenues, expenses, and changes in the position. So this kind of breaks up your operating expenses and your non-operating revenues or expenses. If you kind of look at the expenses, they've pretty much stayed consistent. They have increased, but as we've heard several times this evening, I think everything's increased. But if you look proportionately, everything's pretty much increased about the same. If we hop on down to the non-operating revenues, your biggest change there is your interest income actually increased to $1.534 million. But your total expenses have actually gone down to $183,918. So there's where you're seeing some of your difference is your non-operating revenues expenses have actually gone down. So that's where your net position has gotten better. So overall, your net position end of year has gotten better by $121,679,000.
I do have a couple of questions on that.
Of course.
Looking at some of these particular operating expenses, I noticed that our some of our expenses went up quite a bit. The maintenance is up, but above that, the distribution system maintenance is up almost $1 million. Also, there's another big one here that went up quite a bit. The question is, I don't think we hired any new people. How does our expenses go up? Does that include purchased equipment that we buy too?
It includes materials.
Mm-hmm. Oh, materials?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so I'm looking at it thinking it's what we're paying everybody, but the fact
no, it's
is
not just salary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's materials and it's also in some ways an opportunity expense when they have time, they're spending more time doing maintenance.
But doesn't it drop someplace else then? I mean, you know, you have so many employees, if you assign Mary over here and then move her.
So it's hard to reflect that on here because when they're not doing maintenance, they're working on a job that somebody else is paying for.
And that's included in the other, on the other statement when she talked about, tell me what 107.20 is called.
Construction
work in progress. So she said that had increased. Well, when they're working on a job, that's where their time goes. When they're not working on a job, they're working on maintenance and it's over on this side. So you don't see it swap back and forth.
Is it contractors that were hired?
It's not a professional auditor, I just said.
But it would be all of our contract work that's being done too is included in this maintenance.
Uh-huh.
Now,
but isn't that paid by somebody else?
On our capital projects, that's in the construction work in progress on that side. So it depends on what contractor, what person, where they're working on. But it's two different financial statements.
Okay.
That is a really good question.
I'll trust you.
Thank you.
On that same page, gain and loss on sale of assets. In 23, it's not a lot of money, $4,800, but in this year we lost $41,800. What does that represent?
That's the sale of equipment that we took a loss on. It could have been like we had a gain on some when we sold a vehicle that was fully depreciated, but we also wrecked out switches and transformers, those kinds of things that we just took a loss on it.
Okay.
But didn't we sell that property to the water district?
That was recognized.
Show as a pot,
That was recognized back when the sale occurred.
It says gain or loss on sale of assets. I thought.
Yeah, but that wasn't in 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in 2022.
So that was
but
a couple of
years. Payments, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the gain is recognized
in the year we sold it.
Okay.
Yeah, so they hit it right on the head. That's exactly what it's from. We will talk about that land a little bit further, so you'll have a little bit better picture of that as well. The next page is the statement of cash flows. This statement right here is literally just talking about cash. Your cash in, your cash out. So just to kind of explain that. So cash from operating activities, you had an increase of $18,087,000. Most of that was from increase in cash received from customers. Cash flows from investing activities was down by $10,149,000. Some of that was that sale of assets that we just discussed, and also additions to the utility plant. So those are purchases that were made to make improvements. Cash flows from financing activities was down by $5,218,000. And a lot of that is from the contributions. The big change you'll see there between 2023 and 2024 is the contributions in aid of construction and customer advances. Kind of just went over that where you're seeing that those changes back and forth. So overall, your net change in cash and cash equivalents was up by $2,719,000, which gave, so if you add that to your beginning year balance, you have $4,225,000. So the bottom of that page is the reconciliation of operating income. I'm not going to touch a whole lot on this other than I just want to go over some of the bigger ones. Your depreciation and amortization accounted for $2.924 million of that. And then your accounts payable increased by $1,591,000. So overall, your cash flows from operating activities increased by $18,087,000. Any questions on that one? I'm not going to go into the notes a full ton, especially number one. A lot of those are things that you know a lot better than me. They're talking about Overton Power District, what they do, accounting standards, things that you guys would know way better than I do, being here for as long as you have. I am going to go over to page 13. Again, I just want to hop on that utility plant because it is such a big part of your assets. If you wanted to, I just wanted to reference this that it breaks it down further if you wanted a better understanding of what was included in that. So that's really what I wanted to point out there. Number four talks about the investments associated in the associated organizations. Looking at what you guys go over monthly on your financials, it looks like you guys kind of touch on this already pretty well. But on that next page right there, you do have, at the end of the year, you had $4.142 million. I wasn't going to touch on this, but I'm going to real quick. The contributive capital, this kind of talks about that contributions in aid and construction from customers. This is kind of where some of those funds are that you were discussing. During 2024, there was $883,000 amortized in that. So I think that might help clarify some of those questions there. Next page talks about your long-term debt. These are the debt outstanding that you guys have that you're payable on. So total at the end of 2024, you had $46,699,623. And if you flip over to the next page, this has a breakdown of all of them that are still outstanding. A lot of them mature in 2028. It does sound like you guys go over these quite frequently in your monthly meetings, so I won't touch too much on those. And the next page is the same thing. It has an amortization schedule, talk about how much interest and principal is each year, if you really want to get to the nitty-gritty of all of those. I'm going to talk to pension plans and retirement benefits. I did hear that this is always a large question here. This really dives down more into those if you have any questions. The only thing I'm really going to touch on is on page 19. Sorry, I just keep going, but it's a lot of just legal information. So the liability at the end of December was $11.516 million. That's those numbers that I said are a little shocking. That's a liability on your books, but to actually come to fruition and actually be a liability is very small. It's actually Nevada paying it. But you guys are required to carry it on your books, and that's normally the biggest question that people have.
Well, I also noticed here that our payment to the retirement system is not significant. 33% of salary. Mm-hmm. So a third of everything we pay everybody, we have to pay. So their salary is one third. Well, let's see, if you're on Social Security, it's 7% of your salary. Mm-hmm. But for our employees, it's 33%.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, though, is PERS isn't threatening to go bankrupt.
They can't put money. But the $11 million, is that what we believe to be our incurred liability for employees who are still working?
Correct. So that's your liability. As where it stands now for your current employees, like everything that you have up until December 31st of 2024.
So it seemed to me we would be paid up for that.
It's the unfunded balance. If PERS was to become defunct and every single person was to cash in on their retirement from now, and they have an actuary that says, I'm going to live for this much time and I'm going to make this much money at the end of my career. Kevin's going to live for this much time. He's going to make this much money. What would the balance be that they would have to be paid for their life? And then what percentage of that unfunded balance for every person in PERS is Overton Power's liability, and our liability is $11 million. And so the legislature a number of years ago said, you have to report what your unfunded liability is on your financial statements.
But I am a little shocked that 34% of salary is paid for retirement. Mm-hmm. That's a shocking number in my opinion.
Yeah, when you look at it, you know, from 2020 to 24, you know, a steady march higher, pretty significant.
Steadily.
Yes.
Higher.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if it's going to reach 100%.
I think police and fire is up in the 40%
by yeah.
Oh, yeah, but they get benefits earlier, too. And higher benefit than that.
Yeah, that one's always shocking, and I thank you for explaining that, because you explained it a lot better than I could have.
We've had this talk before, Jenna.
That's why I understood.
I think we've also had it in this room before, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the page, you kind of already touched on it, with the pension expense was $1.8 million. Again, I'm not going to deep dive much into that. On page 21, this just shows what the asset allocation of the PERS fund is, so if you were ever curious, I'm just going to, on page 9, I'm not really going to touch on these as well, because compensated absences and voluntary termination benefits, there's good descriptions there, I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but if you wanted to know, it is there. Note receivable, I am going to touch on this, because this is that Moapa Water Valley District land you discussed that was sold in 2022. So they did make their payments. The balance now is $195,449. They pay that in end of June or beginning of July. They got two more years on that. So they did want to have an update on that. So that's really everything that I'm going to go over on here. On the very back page for the board members, you do have the, it's just the letter to the board members, kind of talks about what our findings are. It's a long page, there's a lot to say. No, your guidance management team does fantastic. We noted no transaction entered into by governmental unit during the year, that there was lack of a third of guidance or consensus, and that all significant transactions have been recognized in the financial statements in the proper period. So, fantastic job. Difficulties encountered in performing the audit. We encountered no significant difficulties in dealing with management. In fact, they were fantastic. As soon as we started giving them lists of stuff that we needed, they just kept giving it to us. So I really appreciate your management team, how great they work with us. Financial statements were great. We really didn't have any findings.
No exceptions, right?
No exceptions. You did fantastic.
Good job, Jonathan.
Yeah, and I know that it's a newer team from my understanding, so great job, guys.
Yeah.
But it was an enjoyable audit for us because we like it when they're clean.
Yeah, so do we.
Do you guys have any questions for me?
Do we want to have her just meet with the board and have you guys go out?
Totally up to you guys.
Well,
Well, she said there was no exception.
We've done that in the past, just so that we could ask, did you have any problems? I think she's already addressed that there hasn't been any problems. In the writing, they put that there actually, we are pleased to report there are no disagreements arose during the course of the audit. So you can, if you'd like to. Every time we've done that, it was all positive, and the board always wished that we'd just done it open so that everybody could hear how great the management was and how it's worked. So you're welcome to do that. I don't think it's necessary because every time it's been good, and from the letter, which is always what I look most at, is the letter to make sure that we, as OPD, are meeting our requirements, and that you guys as a board aren't going to get in trouble because of any financial misconduct of that. They have reported that they have had no such problems, and that even when they had some misstatements, they were immaterial and quickly corrected.
Yeah, and so no concerns, and I'm glad to meet with you guys separately, but we had no concerns with fraud. We did, do random. You guys got my emails too, but no concerns there. If there was any misstatements, it was just a small oversight that was correct.
I just have a couple of questions on that.
So give us a chance just to meet with you for a moment.
Okay. Sounds great.
So we'll leave.
Do you want us to leave right now so you can talk?
These guys probably want to.
Then that way she can go home. Oh, she's from St. George.
I'm fine. Yeah. I'm great to meet
you. Well, let's do it now so you can get off the road.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so before we move on to the agenda item here, Rich is just going to recap what we...
I just want to summarize what we discussed. I had a real question to Gina that I wanted to make sure that Melissa has been able to let go of the financial department, that Jonathan was taking care of those items, because she is going to be so busy. And I worry that Melissa's trying to micromanage that, take care, because that's her baby. You know, she's been doing that for a long time. And Gina indicated, I didn't even know who Melissa was.
That's amazing.
Until the end of the audit, she came in. Jonathan and Kim took care of all those questions, and so that really reassured us as a board.
But she bragged you up too, Kim. She bragged you up as well.
So that was really the reason for our discussion with her. We asked about any other deficiencies, and that they were very good. We talked about the inventory, the controls in that, and she was very complimentary of everything in the audit. So. Just wanted to clear that. Make sure we're all in the titles.
Okay, so do we have a motion on item H?
I have a motion to accept the audit as presented.
Do we have a motion?
I have a second.
Thank you. A second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposing? Pretty straight on that one, sir.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to I. Review and possible approval of OPD scholarship for possible action.
So we received a request from Mr. Young to relook at this. As I looked at the policy, we look at it every year, but it needed some updates, so I made some updates to it. It was kind of unorganized. And so I made some significant changes to the way it's arranged. Before, you had kind of a lead-in statement, then it kind of said what we were going to do, and then it had a bunch of qualifying statements after, which didn't make sense to me. So I added some sections here, tried to organize everything okay. If you feel like you agree with that, that's okay. That's going to be on the scope of what Mr. Young was talking about. I kind of took that upon myself to do that. So if you don't like that, we can, unload that stuff. But Mike, do you want to describe what you're asking for?
Sure. every year, as you know, that I've been sort of against the scholarship because I think the people get it and they leave here. But I understand there is some community benefit giving back to the community. A lot of people from our area, though, have already had their children leave. And, you know, it's a mixed bag here. But I thought to find some kind of thing involved in it that really can help the community. And as I saw it, that our teachers have driven these people. I mean, generally it's a teacher, sometimes a mentor, sometimes someone else, mentor, has driven them. And those people are not recognized in our society as much as they should be, in my opinion. And I said, well, wait a minute, why don't we ask the scholar reciprocant who helped them? Who gave them the chutzpah to do the work they did to earn this kind of scholarship? I mean, it's a hard job. I mean, you know, you have to have good grades through all school. And I thought, maybe we should recognize that person who helped that student accomplish what they got. And so my idea was that it's only $100. It'll add a little bit to our cost, but it's more recognition in a way than it is a financial reward. The financial award needs to go to the student who needs it for school, but the other person getting some recognition for the work they did also inspires others. Because when you hear that Mendes, he was a mentor and he drove me to do this, and the student writes that, that's the kind of people I think we want in our society. And we want to reward those people and recognize them, and hopefully other people will emulate them and become like them. And I think that's missing in a big portion of our society. And I know we're just a little small agency here, but sometimes things have to start somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's a good exercise for the student as well.
Yes, it is, because the student can reflect upon what was given to them. And sometimes they forget it. They're excited about going to school and everything. But then to reflect back, and sometimes in our lives we reflect back, I think, on people who helped us or guided us at an important moment in our life. And I'd say this is a little bit of recognition. Maybe it's only a dinner out these days, but still it's something to reward them. And I thought that would be a nice addition to our policy. And under those conditions, I think even I can support our policy.
So the extra $1,800 would be on top of what we're already awarding?
$1,600. It might be, but in here, the way you wrote it is that the student, number one, has to do it. If they don't want to do it, or they don't think, you know, they thought it was all internal driven, that practice, that's it.
But Mike, we really don't have control over how many, do we?
Yes. Well, I was saying just one per student.
Well, I was, you know, the way I tried to write this, and if I didn't articulate what you wanted, we can change this. But my idea of this was each student, as part of their application for the scholarship, would write an essay about who inspired them. And so if that person gets a scholarship, that person gets the $100 is the way I looked at it.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I think that's a nice.
But only if they get the scholarship.
Only if they get the scholarship.
And only if six of the students are in the same person.
He may only be a few $100 because of grandpa from.
That's one of the flaws.
But if you're an exceptional teacher that everybody really likes and three kids name you, then you deserve that recognition, right? Because they're sending scholarship letters to lots of people, not just OPD5. Yeah. And if they all name the same teacher and that teacher gets $300, great. Great for that teacher.
Yeah. And I ought to brag about that. Mm-hmm. Did I help the students?
But if they're out of our system, then we're
not paying out of the OPD coverage. Customer base.
That it has to be an OPD customer base. And we don't want to give it to their grandpa that lives in, you know, Wyoming or something like that.
And sometimes the person has passed away.
Yep. A parent or something.
You know, you just never know.
who it is, say, you know, my grandfather who passed away 5 years ago drove me to do this. Yeah, you know, you never know what's going to happen, but I was thinking only one, and it's just they write out who was the person that drove them.
I do have one comment to that. There's a lot of teachers that live in Utah that work at the Virgin Valley High Schools and elementary schools.
I don't know. Those are kind of tough questions. Yeah, yeah, to figure out.
Glad I'm not a board member and have to decide that.
And we have, well, we actually have a few out of Vegas that travel to ski or to Overton.
But I think maybe the board has to review it and they have to make their recommendation to give it. The committee, it says right here that the committee will review it and approve it, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, then you can decide.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's approved, it should be within our service area, but there are some cases where somebody may have worked here and moved out or something like that. You know, I think the committee ought to be smart enough to figure something out.
Does the policy state where they have to live?
Well, so I the last part I wrote in there, if they are OPD 5 customers.
Yes.
If you want, I could strike that, and that would remove that.
Yeah, I think the committee ought to knows our idea that it should be somebody in our service area, but there's some cases.
For the judgment of the committee, that could be a state.
Well, there's a scholarship committee appointed each time. Well, a couple people review all the scholarships, two people.
The problem you're going to have is, Mike, is in the scheme in general, there's probably 6, 7, maybe 8 teachers that live in Utah that drive down. So what happens if 6 of these applicants name 6 people that live in Utah? Yeah, well, how do you decipher that?
Maybe just strike it and let the committee decide.
Because I think that teacher is still he or she is still contributing to our society because they're local teachers.
The OPD
customer.
You strike that because it could be a teacher from or Vegas that drives from Hawaii, or whichever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So I think you may want to strike that and just leave it open.
To the committee, the two people whom I trust.
But it's a teacher who's teaching
in there,
not their teacher from.
Yeah, that's right.
They live there, but they teach in the valleys.
Yeah.
Well, and we might have that problem with Scenic, too. I don't know if there's any teachers that live out in Scenic, but, you know, they wouldn't be our customers either. So.
Right. Yeah, I think you might
if you want to limit it, you could say live or work within OPD's boundaries.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah, that way it kind of broadens out a little bit.
But then that keeps it from grandpa in Wyoming. Yep.
Yep. Work or live within 85's boundaries.
Perfect.
Does the policy talk about can they have more than one award?
You mean if they have other scholarships?
No, if two students name the same person.
Sure.
Did they get two?
I think they do.
$200? Yeah.
Two individual.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, I didn't address that because I thought along the lines you did. If somebody's doing a great job, then
I'm fine with that. But does it say they can or they can't?
No.
It just doesn't.
Yeah, it's just silent on that.
Okay, that's fine.
And I have one more correction. If we're making corrections, it will not be effective until 2026 because scholarship applications have already been submitted to the schools for 2025.
We could reach out to the recipients and ask them if they want to submit, if we want to do it in 2025.
The winners.
The winner. If you get, we could say.
Would you like to?
Mm-hmm.
And then
put that as part of their process for next year. But this year, it would be who you've selected. Then they get to submit their letter.
And, you know, having them included in the original process is an advantage because many people will be named, the student will think about who helped them, even if they don't get a scholarship from us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the deal.
Here.
So do we need to change that?
The nomination accepted.
Yes.
Or we just leave the wording the same, that it is effective for this, but we just don't require it as a part of the application process. Okay.
Be an invite for this year. Okay. Any further discussion, comments? Let's go for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the scholarship policy with the changes that we've discussed here.
So the only change is that they have to live or work in the OPD service area.
Correct. We're going to have to live in.
To policy OPD A or 10.205.
Okay.
I'll second.
All right. We've got a motion and a second. Everyone in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Any disagreement? What's the word?
Opposed.
Any opposed?
Hey, real quick, what did we decide? Are we having them after they receive their award, or are they going to name somebody, or is that not...
When we notify them that they've been selected, we'll give them a letter that says...
This year, it will just be an invite.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the next year.
Next year will be part of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm going to come to the board meeting next year because I want to see Mike vote for the scholarship policy.
All right. Hi, Mr. Jay. Now we 2025 capital projects update.
Okay. We've asked... Randall and Kevin to go through some of their most high-profile projects that they're working on. You know, we present our capital project list in October and November each year. We tell you what we're going to spend. These guys have been working on these things. Sometimes they're running into things that might delay the project. Sometimes they're running into things that might have a cost overrun. So we've asked them to just give kind of a high-level overview of where they're at on some of these things and give you an opportunity to ask questions on these if you want to. So I'll turn it over to Randall and Kevin.
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and start. So I had the biggest decision to make on this presentation, whether to do the good first or the bad first.
And to bring donuts or not.
I'm doing the good first, and then it's going to go downhill from there. So I'm going to, the first project we're going to talk about is the ring bus. And the ring bus is the very back here of the Tortoise substation. And we know that RG2, the new line from Reed Gardner, ties in here. And also our existing RG1 line also ties into this ring bus. And also during this process, we realized the need because the solar company bailed on their project with the tribe. And so they had a transformer slot open that was available. And now looking back, we realize it was a good deal. So we went ahead and made that purchase for the 6-9 transformer. But to accommodate that, we needed to extend the ring bus. Oh, come on, Dot. There we go. Okay. We need to extend that ring bus over to this area here so that it has bus work that feeds down, like you can see here, on all the different bays. We needed to build bus work to feed that transformer. And so that is would be the ring bus and the ring bus expansion. And the budget started out at $10,210,000. And our costs to date are $6,200,000. Our estimated costs to complete are about $2.5 million, with a total estimated cost of about $8.7 million.
Wow.
So our under budget projection is going to be around $1.4 million. That is the good news. Now there,
but don't go
close your applause.
there are some factors that still need to play into that. And we still have some portions of the project that we don't have complete pricing on, but we have it budgeted in that number. So I believe that $1 million under budget is very, very, very possible. All these projects that we're talking about, 80% of them are reliability and redundancy projects. They're projects that are for our customers. And as we go through these projects, we just need to realize the cost of that, the cost of us making sure that our customers are in power 98% of the time. Okay, the other project that I'm going to talk about is the 69 bay. And I kind of touched on it before, but you know what, Stephen, this stupid thing...
He's a little arrow.
I know, but it's
talk to it, Randall.
Turn it on and off real quick. You're moving the mouse down.
Coop's going to have me have a special lesson with Steven on how to work.
We already did that.
I know.
What are we going to do next time?
He got it.
Okay. So here's the 69 bay. And we're going to be starting that project in the next few months. Does this bother you guys when I do this?
Okay. Well, anyway. We don't look at it.
Okay, and both of these projects are going to be contracted by Cache Valley Electric, and they're going to be starting these projects probably the next 2 months, and both these projects should be completed by the end of the year.
So is that whole area fenced in?
Yes.
Like all, where you're going to put the expansion? Is
yes.
That,
oh. We actually, to expand the ring bus, we actually had to move the fence and grade this down to meet the existing level, and we added fencing around that backside. So the budget for that project is $5.1 million. Our costs to date are $3.9 million. Our estimated costs complete are just under $1 million, with a total estimated cost at $4.8 million. Our under budget projection is around $300,000. This is mainly the redundancy and reliability for the Moab area and Glendale. And also, the importance of this is, you guys remember we've talked about the... These transformers are our 50 and 60 year old transformers. There's three of them. They're each 20 MVA, and they're going to not last this. What do you think, Kevin? Another 5 years, 4 years, 3 years?
It's
who knows?
Same.
100 years. Rich says 100 years. 100 I'll years. Bet you not. But this 69 bay now will give us the reliability that we need to back these three up.
What size is that new one on the
It's
pad?
A 60.
It's a 60.
Yeah. So it equals three of these altogether. Okay, you go to our KMZ. The next one I'm going to talk about is our Raptor. That is our 138 transmission line from Raptor, from Long Drive, all the way down to Raptor Sub, which is across from Crown Bottling.
Do you guys all know where that's at? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And...
Do you want me to go back to the presentation?
Oh, yeah. So the Raptor line budget was $2.1 million. Our cost to date are $1.3. Our estimated cost to complete are $1.2, with a total estimated cost at $2.5, with an over budget projection of $400,000. Now we do have $500,000 that Crown is contributing to this project, but I've already reduced the expenses for that $500,000. So we're going to be over budget on this project. Sorry to report. We have job work that we have left is the construction contractor and line differential end-to-end testing. The main reason for our over budget were the foundations were double the cost on this project than we estimated. Usually foundation around $15,000 to $16,000. These came in at $30,000 per foundation, and we had 29 of them on this project.
Is that just because contractors are busy enough, they bid them higher?
No, actually, we had 8 contractors bid this, and so if
everybody was.
We had good numbers on it. This.
The price of concrete was way up.
Price of concrete was one thing's up, steel was up, and, you know.
Were the soil conditions comparable to the others, or
they didn't have to do any of that. We had one place where we hit a void, where we had a cave in, but that wasn't that big a deal. The ground was easy to dig. They hit a couple of limestone levels, but the new diggers cut right through that.
Yeah. But even the 30,000 isn't the 400,000. There must have been some other costs over there.
No, there was 29 foundations, so it's 29 times 15,000. That's the difference in this project.
There's your foundation. I see the S now.
Yeah, foundations. We had 29 foundations because if you look at this, yeah, we had to go. I'm sorry, Steve. We had to zigzag down through the roadway to get inside the median. And so that was added a lot of cost. Okay, I'm going to talk about the Tortoise to Gila line, the transmission line. But I wanted to show you guys in here. This is looking from the south into...
You're doing the
I'm just doing this thing right here. Okay, so anyway, we have to come and do some work in this bay here, where the new 138 line is going to come out. next to our existing 138. And that's part of the work was included with the contractor who's doing the T-line work. And then future, we have another open bay on the 138 bus, and we have that planned for a future large project that we think is going to happen in Moapa that'll be fed off of this line into a 30 MVA substation in the Lewis Ranch area. And so right now we're designing this wood structure to come out and change it to a steel structure. And in doing that, we're planning to have a double circuit built on this line so it can come down and follow out our existing 138 line, double circuit, until we split it off into the Lewis Ranch area.
Mm-hmm. So the new line going to Gila for a portion will be double circuit?
Yes. Yeah. No, our existing 138 line.
Well, the existing will rebuild that whole right. section through there. Okay.
Right.
Will we recoup any cost from that?
We'll recoup a lot of the cost.
To fruition?
Yes, because the substation that we're building for this new customer will be a radial substation, so all of that will be theirs. So they'll be paying for 100% of that build.
Quit opposing the cement deal, maybe they'll give you a deal.
Well,
next
that's
slide.
A thought. That's a thought. We kind of don't throw our public support towards it because of the Logandale anti-people up there, Jack, in your neighborhood.
Right.
Down Wells Road?
Yeah, yes. Down Wells Road.
Damn guy.
All right, let's go to the...
Double-click that middle button for me, Randall.
I did. This is a KMZ of the line from Tortoise all the way to Gila. But I wanted to highlight an area, unless there's something else you guys want to look at. We have a crossing area that we're having some issues with. And I've talked about them right-of-way issues. I've mentioned that to you guys before.
That's we have on the where your hand is?
Yes. So right there in that area is where we're trying to get right-of-way obtained. And we're 99% through the process, but we still haven't got it signed to
us.
Was it across the gas line area? Yeah. And so what we had to do, thanks, Stephen, let's go back to the presentation. So the budget for the T-line was $17,300,000. And also the budget, we added the portion for the connection in the Tortoise substation of $678,000 with a total budget of just under $18 million. Total cost to date are $7.7 million. Estimated costs complete are $9.8 million with a total estimated cost that's just over $17 million with an under budget projection of $297,000. Now, what's that?
How much of our... stuff is bought for that, out of that $9 million?
90% of it's...
Or under contract or whatever?
It's all under contract. And 90% of it has been paid. We still have materials coming in that we have to pay for, and that's why the estimated cost to complete is in there, because mm-hmm. we still have materials to take care of.
So it should be pretty firm, because they're all...
Well, yes, those portions are. I'm going to get to the portions. It's not really firm. Anyway, so this is redundancy and reliability for the Mesquite area. This gives us, you know, two lines going to the Mesquite and also accommodates future build-out. Mm. And two of the things that we don't really have a number on is we have reclamation. So anytime that we build a line and we disturb BLM grounds, we have to reclamate it, as in go in and reseed. We have to make it look like it was before we got there. Rake out, level out the dirt, make sure that, you know, it looks like we haven't been there other than a pole sitting there. And I would take him, I would show him pictures of lines that we built 30 years ago. And if you go out to them now without the reseeding, without the restoration, they look exactly like they would before. Nature takes its course and takes care of it. But anyway, and that cost, and we don't have a number on that because it depends on how much is disturbed. So we have a price per foot to come in, reseed, and to fix it. But we don't know what that total is until we go out after the contractor's done.
Can I just say one thing on that? That is redundancy and reliability for both valleys.
Okay. Thank
you. Because that goes over there, and you can backfeed into Moapa Valley, or you can feed into Virgin Valley.
That's correct.
So I want everybody to feel like that they're getting something out of this project.
Thanks.
I feel better now.
Okay, good.
Thanks, Mike. And also tortoise monitoring. We have to have tortoise monitors with the crews that are on the T-line, and we don't know how much that's going to cost. We have an estimate, but we don't know if the contractor's going to break up into two crews or how they're breaking up. They're still working on their schedule.
Maybe those people will be looking for a new job.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I sure hope so. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
You know what? You should come to the BLM meetings with me, Mike. You share that.
Believe me, I was at many BLM.
Okay, all right.
We might be in trouble.
Yeah, that's right. I had disguise good.
So this is the area that I talked to you guys about where we're trying to get a new right-of-way. We had to change our original alignment and go with new right-of-way. So we're coming behind these structures here. We have to cut this hill down to get a line through there. And right now we have 50,000 yards to move to get us a slot through there. And we're going out to bid on that the next, hopefully, month and see what that cost is. I have it budgeted about $10 a yard or about $500,000. So we'll see where that comes in at. We can't really go out to bid for it until we know the right-of-way that we're going to get for sure. We've asked for what we normally ask for, but we don't know for sure what they're going to give us yet. Normally, they give us what we ask for, but until we have them right in, there's no sense going out and getting numbers.
Where does all that dirt go?
Well, some of it...
We're on record.
I was looking for Chad.
What we plan to do with it is to screen a lot of it because we have a lot of sand roads up there, and we'll screen it, get the rock out, and put it on our roads where we have really sandy areas. But we really can't do that till after the BLM comes in and does their final inspection. And then we can kind of help build our roads back up. And then we have areas still. We have two areas that we have found pole locations that we have about 15,000 yards to fill, to build a pad for. So we have some of it that we need to use on the job.
Yeah. Right, it'll be close by.
Oh yeah, it's probably, no, we don't have to clear go clear across the Mason, no. It's probably about within a half a mile of this area here. And that's my report.
There you go.
Any other questions?
That's pretty darn good though.
Yeah. Overall it is.
The under and over is pretty close.
Yeah, you're doing great.
Well, we'll see next year when we're done with all these. I'll give another report. We'll see how it comes out.
We'll get the rest of the story.
The rest of it, right? Paul Harvey. I'll give you the Paul Harvey.
Very good.
All right. So,
you giving us the good news first, Kevin?
Yeah, good news first. It's a nice looking substation so far. Look at how pretty that is. This is Long Drive. I'm giving you some pictures to have a visualization before I...
Thanks.
So we've got Raptor on the left and Long Drive on the right. And this is as they were 2 weeks ago, I think, maybe a week ago. We've got some shots here. So Raptor substation, all the materials arrived except for the steel towers. The conduit cable trench is currently being installed. The construction above ground and towers and bus work will begin in May. This is an overhead shot of that substation. Mm-hmm. Looks like little ants have been working down there. All of those trenches are now filled up, and they've got the cable tray from the building out extended out to that last pad. Mm-hmm. And so it's looking really good in there. Long Drive switch yard. Mm-hmm. There again, all the materials are there except for the steel. It's scheduled to be delivered in July or June. Hunt Electric is doing the work on both these substations, and they'll start their underground here as soon as they're done at Raptor. So the above ground will begin somewhere in July.
Kevin, have we heard anything from the residents along there? Are they voiced any problems? Or?
I think they've kind of settled down, haven't they, Randall?
No.
No? Okay. Yeah, we've heard from them, apparently.
Every time we put up something tall, they...
Yes, they think it's done, and we've tried to tell them no.
It hasn't started yet.
The tower's not even in yet, so we're going to get some more comments here in the next few months.
This is the overhead drone shot of Long Drive Switch Yard. So here's where we get to the nitty-gritty. So ECI gave us a cost estimate on both these jobs before we even started them. For Raptor Substation, they said it was going to cost around $4,440,000. But they excluded a lot from this estimate because the market was so volatile that they didn't have current pricing on a lot of the equipment. So everything in red is what they excluded from that bid, from that previous estimate or that first estimate. And so we went out for transformer bids, breaker bids, just like everything else. We got, I think it was 6 or 8 transformers bids back, and we took the ones that were the best ones, and breakers the same way. You know, everything is, so we added that in because that was an actual cost. And so that estimate total budgeted for Raptor is $7,178,000. And for Long Grass, which yard, it was $5,694,000. So far, we've used, as of the 13th, and that's the green line number 12, that's what we've actually got in POs. So we've written those POs. That's money that's already been written out for those projects. And I would say probably 90 to 95% of that money is already, that's what's been allocated. We've only got like 5% left that we need to still spend. So there's not a lot left. So on the Raptor job right now, currently we are under $910,000. And the Long Drive job, we're under $215,000. That $215,000 on Long Drive, I think we will end up spending that on just expenses that we haven't paid out yet. But the Raptor sub, we won't hit that $900,000 mark. We'll probably hit probably close to $500,000 in my estimation. So other contributions, that's Crown, has paid $2 million towards the Raptor substation and $500,000 towards Long Drive. And then we had a contribution from the water district because we put in hydrants, and we got a little kickback from them because they made us oversize it. Is that Randall?
Yeah, we oversized the water line. They asked for a larger water line than what we needed to just feed the hydrants near us.
I want to just clarify. We got a contribution.
Contribution. Contribution, that's right.
Strike kickback.
It wasn't a Did I say kickback? It was a contribution. Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, Bert is okay now. I just didn't hear
that. He's part of the family.
So the bottom line is what actually the cost to the district has been so far.
Long Drive, the original estimate was 3.8, and it looks like it's going to be 4.9. That's right?
Well, 3.8 was a cost estimate excluding the stuff in red. So after we include the stuff in red, it was close to 5.7 million.
So it was 5.7, now it's coming in at 4.9.
Because of contributions.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. And that's my report.
As we were anticipating those contributions, yes. Were we?
Yeah.
Those were done two or three years ago when Crown first came to us. We had an agreement of what they would fund.
That's why we built the Raptor Sub.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That was
for discussion only. Amanda's final thoughts. Discussion only.
Final thoughts. Steve, if you'll bring up my presentation here. There's a couple purposes for this. I wanted to, first of all, kind of give you an indication of where we're at with some of the things that I started when I was a new general manager. And I wanted to also kind of show you how we got to where we are with some things. And the purpose behind that is because things move in cycles. And I want, you know, as I walk away from this, I want the board to feel comfortable with understanding these cycles that we go through in our business and the cycles that we go through in the economy. Now, the business cycle and the economy cycles, you know, they follow a natural sine wave, but they're not in sync with each other. They're separate from each other. And so understanding those cycles is really important. And so I wanted to talk about some of the things that we did, some of the things that you could maybe reference going forward as you meet challenges with the economy and with decisions that you have to make in the future. It's always important to remember that we were hurt pretty bad by the 2008 slowdown, and that is something that comes up in our Fitch report every time that Fitch does analysis for us. They tell us that we can't upgrade beyond where we currently are because of economic exposure. And so, again, I think that just highlights the importance of some of the things that we need to watch for and some of the things that we need to do. This gives you an indication of how the business cycle and the economic cycle are a little bit different from each other. And the thing that I find interesting here is the yellow line is the market or the business cycle. And it says there that on the left that finance, technology, and cyclicals should be bought when the market bottoms. The interesting thing is right now, if you look at the stock market, financial stocks, technology stocks, AI stocks, cyclical stocks are all taking a beating in the market, which means the market is going down and we haven't reached that market bottom quite yet. The reason that's important is if that market continues to go down and we do see that bottom, a lot of times what follows that is that blue line, which means a potential recession or a slowdown. And it'll be interesting to see how this comes apart. I know that through Trump's policies that he's trying to address the fact that we're in an inflationary environment with high interest rates. They're not able to lower the interest rates because inflation is so high. He's put tariffs in place to accomplish a lot of different things. He's trying to accomplish some economic things as well as some political things. The interesting thing will be the effect. Does that push us into a recession, or does that push the Fed to move faster on lowering interest rates to keep us from going into a recession? Something that Melissa is going to have to monitor and talk with you guys about as we go forward. So we have to always be aware of where we're at in these economic cycles. Right now we have to be concerned, are we in a slowdown or are we going to be heading into a slowdown? The other thing is when will interest rates fall? And just to look back, I think that, you know, we've tried to use ideas like this. This is the reason we understood the economic cycle, is the reason that we went out and got our CFC loans before interest rates went up. And making decisions based on where we're at in these cycles has been very important to us, and it's either benefited us or hurt us depending on what we've done. And so the secret sauce here is we need to anticipate these cycles, and we always need to remember cash is king. Having cash is very important. Ken Bloomfield, it goes back to Ken, doesn't it? So, when I first took over as general manager, and I was talking with Melissa about this today, you know, I took over in July, but really I took over in about April, 2 months before that, because just like Melissa, I'd had kind of things turned over to me. And I remember sitting at my desk and I picked up the financial statement and I go, I'm in charge of 60 people and a $35 million budget. Where do I start to fix this? Where do you start? And so I looked in some books, and I think one of the books I borrowed from Elisa was an accounting book, the only accounting book on my shelf.
And
and I'm going to leave it behind for you with some notes. But it said in there that, you know, the most important financial statement you have is your balance sheet. But the way that you manipulate your balance sheet is through the income statement. So what I've done throughout my time as general manager is every month when I get these reports that you get in board meeting with our income statement or balance sheet, I go through and I enter these on a spreadsheet. And for a while I had Merlin do this electronically for me, but that was no good to me because I can think about what's going on as I'm typing in the numbers, and that is a lot more beneficial than just getting a report of what the numbers are. So what I've done here is I've got 2012, which is the year before I took over as general manager. I've got 2013, which was my year, and 14. And then I've cut out the middle sections so you can see 23, 24, and 25. We're going to go through some things here. But right now I want to focus on 2012. You can see that our at the top on line one that our revenue was almost $2.9 million. On line 20, our total cost of electric service was $2.7 million. And that our margin was $149,000. And our financial ratios were kind of a mess. And we had some problems. So I just want to run through what we did so we can learn from this. So in 2013, what I did, one of the first things I did was I emphasized a transition away from capital projects to maintenance projects. Now, we had been doing a lot of capital projects, but those capital projects were necessary. Rich was the head of the line crew, and we had a lot of direct buried underground cable that was in bad shape. And so Rich was real aggressively doing capital projects, trying to replace that cable before we had problems. And so what we did was very necessary, but as soon as we got in a good spot, we stopped those and we started to focus on maintenance. We also started, as I told you, we had 59 employees at the time plus two temporary workers for a total of 61. So the other thing that I thought I could do to cut cost was to let the workforce reduce. And so we did that a couple of ways. I won't go through that because some of it was painful for people. The other thing that we had is we had power contracts that were fixed, that were for fixed amounts of power. And with the economic downturn that we had, we weren't using all of the power that we had purchased on the market, so we had excess, and we were taking a loss on that every month. So one of the first things I did, I went in and talked to Terry, and we put together a spreadsheet together, and we every month Terry would do, she put together a spreadsheet where she looked at how do we forecast what our power use is on a one-month lag basis throughout the year? What percentage is it of the previous month? And I did a spreadsheet that looked at what was it a year ago and what did we expect the growth. And then I also had another spreadsheet that incorporated the weather into that so that we could come up with a better estimate of where our power use is. And then once we came up with that estimate, we called the Silver State Energy Association, and we sold them every kilowatt hour that we could sell them. Now, the problem was is they were happy to sell that for us. We sold that at a loss. Our contract was up here. The market was down here. We sold at a loss, but at least it was cutting our losses is what we did. So we started selling to SSEA, and we started emphasizing and focusing on our financial metrics. So I think it's important to go through these things because I think that when we look back at this, we tend to think, well, we were in a really bad situation until we signed the Morgan Stanley contract, and then everything was better. And that's not really the way that it happened. We had to go through a lot of work. So in 2014, we started implementing more rigid budgeting for the staff and having them follow their budgets. We added additional spending oversights and checks. We rebid a lot of our outdated contracts. We created a schedule for large purposes. For example, we knew that regularly we needed to buy pickup trucks, that we needed to buy backhoes, that we needed to buy bucket trucks, and that happened on kind of a routine basis. So we started a savings program so that when these expenditures came up, that we had some money in the bank that we could buy those, that we weren't trying to borrow money to buy trucks. Now, through these efforts, we had to get our financial metrics up to a level where CFC would accept our debt. A lot of our debt was in bonds, and we wanted to convert that to CFC debt, but we couldn't because our metrics weren't good enough. So in 2015, our metrics finally got to where they needed to be, and we were able to refund those bonds and then convert everything to CFC debt, which was a huge, huge relief to us. Over the life of those loans, it saved us over $6 million by converting that to CFC debt. And then we started an investment program to get some return on our savings. If you remember, the interest rates were still pretty low, and we were getting like 0.17% on our money in the banks. And if you guys remember, we started investing in the CFC security certificates that they had. And we had those on a rolling basis, where we would had four to six certificates, and they renewed at a level so that every month we were renewing one of those and trying to capture the best interest rate that we could get. And that really helped us. And then later, Melissa did some good things there to help us. So let's go back to our sheet here. Can you see that good enough? Can you see the numbers? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So one of the things I focused on here was our revenue. And you can see that our revenue went up over time. That's a good sign. That is a very good sign. The other thing that we looked at here is cost of purchase power. Now, the dollar amounts aren't so necessary. What I looked at was the percentages. So cost of purchase power was almost 66% of our income was spent on that. If you notice that by selling our power, we started that in 2013, we were able to reduce our power cost by almost 9%. By selling that excess power and doing some things a little bit different. And then you can see over here, as we get past 2014 into 2023, you can see that cost of purchase power. That's where you see we signed the Morgan Stanley contract in 2016. And you can see that lowered our cost of purchase power down to about 48%. Mm-hmm. And so that was a huge, huge help to us. And we stayed in that range until we got to this year, where this is the Tenasca contract, and that's the reason I'm showing you February and not this on a yearly basis, is I wanted to show you the effect of what Tenasca does to our finances on a monthly basis. And so you can see that changes that our cost of power is now 58% of revenue, but the interesting thing is, as high as that is, we're still below where we were in 2012. And I find that really interesting.
And in July, that will be a little better.
Yeah, should be. Now, we talked about maintenance. Here, you know, we're still working on capital projects, and I talked to Rich, who was over the cruise. Let's focus on maintenance for two purposes. First of all, it saves us money. The second thing is it keeps the power on so that we're getting more revenues, right? And so you can start to see here that on line 7, distribution maintenance. In 2012, we spent about $90,000. That jumps up to $124,000. And you see that continue to go up. And we've continued to focus on maintenance. Mm-hmm. Kyle reports to you the audits and the things that we do maintenance, and you can see that we have asked them to continue to spend money on maintenance, and I'd like to see them spend more even. There's more that they can do.
3%.
But
I like where we're at, and you're right, Mike, you looked at that percentage. We're at about 3%. No, excuse me, 5%, whereas when we started, we were at 3%. So we went from 3% to 5% on our maintenance, and we still need to see that climb a little bit. So if you jump down here, our total cost of electric service in 2012 was 95% of our revenues. And then you see that, you see the effect of the things that we do, that drops down to 84. And then we kind of settle into a range here where we're around 78 to 81%. With our new contract, that's pushed us up to about 87%. But you can tell by from these numbers, these percentages, that is driven by the cost of power, not by labor or other things like that.
It's also driven by the fact that we didn't raise our rates. We could have raised our rates more, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And force that number down.
Yeah.
But that's always a very politically driven decision in a lot of ways for our customers.
It is. And it's never an easy or happy decision to make. But
that's right.
It's an essential decision.
Yeah.
And that's one of the important things I wanted to bring out here is in 2012, we did do a rate increase, and that helped us, but it didn't help until we started these other things. You still have to have cost control.
Yeah.
And that's what drove our margins to change. And even here with the increased cost of power, you're still seeing our margins come in at a better level because that's helping us. So one of the other things that I do is Melissa had, when she was in finance, had her department. They would every day at the end of the day look at a spreadsheet that told them what the cash balance was. So those are some of the things that we spent money on.
Whoa.
So what I've done during my career as general manager is every Friday I get onto her spreadsheet and I type in that where we're at on a cash balance basis. So that is my entire time as general manager. That's what our cash balance has been every Friday through my time as general manager. So
Wow. This
is what it looks like on a graph. So this is 2012. So you can see that in the early part of the year, we are at our height, our cash was at $6.5 million. And at the lowest part of the year, we were at $688,000 of cash. $688,000. So we did a rate increase right in here, but you can see that really didn't change the profile of that because our costs still needed to be worked on. And so when we went to this is 2012, now this is 2013. So this is about the time that I took over. We started doing trying to control our costs. You can see that the effect that it had on our cash balance, which was positive, but still not where we wanted to be. So we continue to do that. This is 2012 through 2020. So here's the blue line in 2012. This is 2013, and you can see how we've been able to improve our cash position every year through the efforts that we're doing to control our costs and do the things that we needed to do. And when you do strategic planning this year, it's going to be essential for you guys to sit down and decide what level should your cash be. Because we took out our loans a couple of years ago, and it makes our cash look really good. But you can see right here, we're starting to spend down that cash on these projects. At some point, you're going to have to set the level that you want that cash to go down to before you start borrowing again. Mm. But that's what that looks like graphically. But just a heads up, and Melissa is well aware of this, that you're going to have a talk about this. So in 2012, our cash savings was $4.3 million. In 2016, after we did the Morgan Stanley contract, our cash was at 10.8. And in 2022, before we took out our new CFC debt, our cash was at $21.329 million. That's a result of our cost cutting,
our savings programs and the work that we did. This is the effect that it had on our financial ratios. You can see that we were required to have a 1.35. I told you that we worked hard to get that up to 1.35 by the end of 2014. That allowed us to convert our bonds over to CFC debt. That was one of their requirements. TIER isn't one of their requirements, but it's something that the other lending institutions look at. But you can see how our TIER has changed over the last 12 years. This is important for CFC. We had to get up to 40%. And I remember when in 2014 we were 39.86, and we talked to our regional vice president, and they said, well, 39.86 rounds up to 40, so we think we can work with you. And so that's when we converted over that those bonds to our CFC debt. And now you can see our equity as a percent of it, percent of assets is 68.88%. Now, I want to focus on this number a little bit because this is an important number for you guys to look at, because this tells us how much of our system is being funded by our customers versus debt. And when this number gets too high, it means our current customers are contributing too much to future expenses, where we should be borrowing money so that our future customers help pay for that future project. So my ideal is to keep that number between 50% and about 80%. And so whenever it gets up, and we did this a couple years ago, we talked about this, that we were up in the 75% range. We needed to take out that $26 billion in debt and not just rely 100% on our revenues from our customers. We needed to spread that debt out. And you're going to have to do that again coming up sometime, at a time that you guys decide. This is how our Fitch rating has changed over that time. Started off at a triple B plus with a negative outlook, and today we're at an A rating with a stable outlook. And as I've mentioned earlier, we've worked with Fitch, and they said, well, based on your economy, that's about as good as you can get. So I'm not happy with that, but I guess I'm satisfied with that. So how did that affect our balance sheet? Our balance sheet is broken into two parts, the assets on top, the liabilities on bottom. So this is a blow-up of the assets. So
one of the things that I'm curious if they taught you this, Randy, in your class back in Atlanta. When I took the class, they said you should always focus on this net utility plant, that this number should always increase. Did they talk about that?
A little bit, but after the first 3 hours, I was like in the weeds. So I was like, oh boy.
The reason that's important is you want your net utility plant to increase so that you're outpacing inflation. If you're not outpacing inflation, you're not putting enough money into your system to keep it up current. And so that's an important number to look at. But there's something else I want you to look at here. Our total utility plant in 2012 was just under $96 million. Our plant today is at almost $195 million. In the last 12 years, we've added almost $100 million of plant value. And in this October, OPD will be 90 years old. In this last 12 years, we've added more plant to the OPD5 system than we did in the previous 77 years of OPD5's existence. So we've had a tremendous amount of work going on and a tremendous commitment from these guys to get the projects done, to invest in plant and our reliability projects, the other things that need to be done to make that happen. If you look at our net utility plant after depreciation, about $75 million. You can see here we're at about $145 million, so we've almost doubled our net utility plant over the last 12 years. In here, I look, cash is, I've kept a close eye on cash, but my Friday spreadsheet has been more important to me than what's on here, because you have so much money that bounces between cash funds and temporary investments, and you see that especially here. It looks like our cash isn't going up. That's because we're putting the maximum amount in our investments so that we can get the best return, because we're not getting anything in the bank. So that's why that looks a little bit low. But that's been a really good program. One of the things we worked on initially when I was first made general manager was our material and supplies. That's our warehouse. One of the things that I asked the crew to do was to use up some of the old materials in the warehouse instead of buying new materials. We tend to, when something new comes out, we use the new stuff, and whatever we bought before we don't use. So we talked and said, why don't you use up the old stuff first? And so we were able to cut our inventory down by about $100,000 at first, well, about $75,000, and then we did another, about $50,000 here. And then somewhere in here, about 2015, I gave these guys the assignment to get 1 mile of line for every type of line that we do, that we have that in our warehouse, and we've seen our inventory go back up. And then also with the projects that these guys are doing, we've seen our inventory really go up. But you know, now it's at $4.6 million, but that's okay based on what we're doing. So if you look at the assets of this company, in 2012 our assets were at $93 million. Today our assets are $190 million. Again, we've added almost $100 million of assets in 12 years, which I think is pretty remarkable. Now let's look at the liability side. Our equity in the company used to be at $32 million. You can see today that it's $128 million. Our equity in the company has gone up 4 times. The interesting thing is you can manipulate some of those other numbers by taking on additional debt. And so I think it's important to also look at the fact that in 2012 we had $57 million of debt, and today we have $47 million of debt. So we've added $100 million of plant to our system and reduced our debt at the same time, which I think is huge. That's a huge thing. So what are some of the other things that we did as we went along? We changed the staff's reporting duties at board meetings. When I was doing reports as an engineer, Rich and I would get together and we would put together a report, and I would give that to the general manager, and the general manager did all the talking at the board meeting. Rich and I didn't say anything, even when we were invited. We weren't invited all the time. At least I wasn't. I don't know if Rich was.
As but, I remember, the board didn't do any talking. Except for the chair.
So one of the things that I wanted to have happen here is I wanted you to have confidence in the staff here, and I wanted you to know what they were doing and be able to ask them questions. I think that from the financial statements, and I think from the reporting that they do and the opportunity that you have the ability to understand everything that goes on in this company based on those two things. If you marry what they say to what you see on the financial sheet, I think that's really important. We started the management mentoring program in 2015, and Terry brought me the idea, and we worked on developing what we wanted that to be, and Terry did the lion's share of the work, but what an important thing that was. The management mentoring program, you see the result here at this table. And then in 2016, we negotiated the new PPA with Morgan Stanley, and they were able to buy out one of those high-priced contracts that I talked about that we were locked into. They were able to buy us out early so that we were able to get rid of that contract. And then we were able to put together the system reliability plan that we started working on in later 2016 and 2017. We started the 10-year capital project plan so that you could see what was coming up in the next 10 years and how we were going to spend our money, and I appreciate these guys giving you an update on that plan today. In 2016, we started negotiations on a transmission rate dispute. I still have permanent scars from that.
I remember the first day that Craig Silverstein and I walked in and talked with the folks there. They basically threw us out. And when we got outside, I told Craig, I said, that didn't go very good. And he goes, hey, this isn't over. This is just the start. He says, we're going to come back, and we're going to come back, and we're going to come back with a smile and a sword. And that's what we did. And Byron helped us as we resolved that too. So thank you, Byron, for your help in that. We created over a dozen plans to guide the business. Things from business plans to emergency plans to assessments to studies. I have a sheet. I didn't want to show you the sheet, but it's a sheet with all the plans that we should do and arrows going everywhere. I've been counseled not to show you that because it's confusing. But we also did a new company logo and company rebranding. Then we completed the transmission dispute and resolution in 2019. We did a second MMP session, which Christy participated in. We started our reliability projects back in about the 2019 period. We started with the tortoise ring bus, and you can see that Randall's working on completed the Gila to Dino line. That was the 10-mile line from Gila to Dinosaur. The Gila switchyard, the new 230 kV line we're working on, was just completed. That work was completed last year. The guys are now working on Raptor substation, long drive, and the Raptor 138 line. We also did the office addition from 2019 to 2020. And then we also did a cleanup. I tasked Melissa and Kyle with reorganizing our warehouses and yards, and they did that, and it looks awesome. Every time I drive through there, I feel a lot better. So in 2023, we took out new CFC loans, and we did that before interest rates went up. And we were able to invest that money in a higher rate. Melissa came to me with the idea of moving to Morton Assets where we could get even better interest rates. And that has turned out to be a very good thing for us. We've put in place regular strategic planning sessions. The management team has gone through a reorganization. When I was first general manager, the management team was me and Rich and Terry. And then we added John Jensen to that. And then when Rich retired, Bruce took his place. And then later we reorganized to what we have now. We've just recently negotiated a 3-year PPA with Tenasca Power Services. We did that for a 3-year period because with the high prices, we thought shorter is better. We'll look and see where the market is in 3 years. And if there's an opportunity to do something different, like a blend and extend or a buyout, it gives Melissa the opportunity to do that. During these last few years, I've also served as president of CRETA for 2 years, the vice president for 2 years. I've been serving on the executive committee for the last 7 years, the nominating committee for the last 3 years, and the legislative committee for the last 10 years. At NREA, I've served as president for 2 years, secretary for 3 years, and REAN, which is the Rural Electrical Advocates of Nevada, our statewide political action committee, I served as treasurer for 3 years and vice president for 3 years. So it's been a whirlwind of a time these last 12 years. I want to remind you that there are economic cycles that Melissa is going to bring to you, and she's going to explain why we need to do certain things, and I want you to be aware of why she's doing those things. We'll face challenges that we've faced before, and we'll be able to handle those things if we recognize them and if we attack those things the right way. And I've highlighted some of these before, but three of the things that you're going to need to look at coming up is: when will we borrow additional monies? When will we raise rates again? And will we need to slow if we see the economy slowing down? We'll have to watch that to see. Final analysis. I want to tell you how much I've appreciated working with the board. We've been a good team. What we've accomplished here is not just me, it's the management team, and it's you guys. Thank you. We've accomplished some great things. I looked at a book a while back. It was written by Ron Wolf, who was the general manager and vice president of the greatest NFL football team that has ever been, the Green Bay Packers. And it was titled The Packer Way. So I stole this from him. What we've done, I consider to be the OPD5 way. I think you have a great staff here with great knowledge and experience. And in the future, I hope you'll continue to do things the OPD5 way. I have a lot of people that say to me, why don't you do things the way the city does them? Why don't you do things the way the telephone company does it? Why don't you do things the way the water company does it? Well, it's because I think we have a pretty successful way. And I think that, I mean, I'm certainly always willing to steal good ideas from people, but I think we've had a pretty good system here. And I think that is borne out in the numbers that I've just shown you. So I'm going to challenge you guys to continue to stick to the OPD5 way. My wife is here. I want to thank her for supporting me. We're grateful to this board for the opportunity to work here for so long and for what it's meant to me and my family. Thank you. And I owe a big thanks to Rich, who invited me to work here not once but twice. Once as a temp and once as a full-time worker. And so thank you to you guys. I have incredible memories of working here, and I will miss working here. I want to say thank you for everything you've done for me. Thanks.
Dying down cycle right now.
They've bottomed and they're coming back up.
Okay, all right, we'll see.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Under public comments, you got any public comments?
I can't follow that.
You can say, I'm glad you're retiring, Candace.
She's going to think that for probably a week or two, and then she's going to want to send me back.
Oh, man, chances are.
I look at all that stuff and I think, dang, we should have had you do our household finances. But doing it this way has kept our marriage happy, if not as successful as the company, darn it. But I definitely appreciate all of you people. You're definitely your family. And he's got me going, which doesn't take much. You've been so good to us, every one of you. Every time there's an election, we approach that with a little fear and trepidation. What are we going to get for him to work with? And I've got to say, it works out beautifully, and we appreciate all your hard work. And his staff has just been amazing. They've welcomed us from the beginning. Even Richard.
It seems to me the way you judge how a family has worked is how the kids come out. You guys have done well.
Thank you.
So as part of trustee comments, we're going to listen to a couple of reports about Atlanta. We'll hold these to 5 minutes apiece, please. We'll start with Mike or Randy. Doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
Is that all right, Randy?
Yes.
Okay.
I went to a very interesting class in Atlanta. Oh, by the way, before I even say that, I've been here 10 years, and I remember in 2014, we were in tough shape. We came in with one hell. Really. And it's interesting to see those, because I sort of lived through those. I've forgotten a lot of it. was really tough times. I remember you guys couldn't even buy trucks. It was tough, and a lot of good things, but spreadsheets, wow. Anyway, I went to a class in Atlanta when I was there, and the class was on compensating the chief executive officer. And in that class, they said a couple of things that I thought were really pretty cool, and I wanted to share them with you, because you spent $800 or so to send me there to take the class, and I think that if we go to a class and we don't share it with the others, I forget some of the stuff, but if I, it helped me remember what I studied and look at it and see what was important in that message. And so these are the things that I found were very fascinating. And of course, leadership model they gave us. And a leadership model? What the heck's that, you know? And so I looked at the paperwork, and here's what they showed us here. First of all, there are five different groups in this thing. And they said that a general manager, with compensation, and it can be governance. And a lot of agencies fall into governance. They focus on the board and long-term results, how important that is. And they also said there's external leadership, a general manager who focuses outside with the industry, as Mendes has done in all the organizations he belongs to, and community focus, to have community meetings and contribute to the community. The other thing, they might be just getting results, performance, everybody has to get up and cheer, and you have to do things. But he also did that for us too, didn't he? He got the whole team together. Isn't that interesting? And then, whoops, what happened here? Oh, man. Okay, here we go. Working through others. And this is an interesting thing, because I thought, this is where Niles is right now. Because she needs to build teams. Just as he did when he came in, he said he put together the team. It was so different. It was only the three of them to start with, and how important it was to build that. And then the last thing was, some people just want to do the right thing. They have integrity and courage. And some of them say, step against other people who try to influence them, but they do the right thing anyway. And he sure does that. So that, I thought that was very interesting. And they asked us where we were for each of the people in the class. And I said, well, you know, right now, it's team building and getting the staff together. And Mendes worked on it a lot over the last 6 months, turning each group over to work with her and helping her get that group together. Because the team building allows you to stand up tall and not have to make every decision. Your team does it for you. And then results, and that's going to be our job when we go ahead and have a strategic plan. Because we have to get together as a board and say, hey, this is where we want to take it. And from that, I thought that was very important. And then the maturity of the organization, as you mature in the organization, as Mendes has external leadership, you have to stand up and help the whole industry get ahead, which he's done. And participation. So you can see how this model works over time too, because at first you build a team, and ultimately you can go ahead and do external leadership, and finally the governance, which he gave us tonight. And if you think about it, helping us what the board needs to do in the future and how it flows into the future, how important that is. But that was the leadership model, and I found that fascinating, because this is the kind of stuff that we want to have, and hopefully our new general manager, I know she will, but I follow these kind of principles, because that was really good. Everybody in the class go, wow, that's really, they never thought of it, that board member, I never thought of it that way. And so I really learned something. And then they said, the other important thing here was that you have to have a strategic planning meeting, and in that meeting, the board has to decide what the goals should be. Oops, let's see here. And they said SMART goals. Well, aren't goals all SMART? Well, I found out they have to be specific. We have to tell the general manager what we expect. We want to have two community meetings, one in Mesquite and one in Overton, in the next year. You got to be real specific on what you want, but you don't tell them how to do it. You make them and their staff decide how to do it. And then finally, they have to be measurable. You have to be able to measure the goal. You had two, you had three, I don't know. Finally, they have to be achievable, something that's possible, and then results focused. And finally, time bound. It has to be done by a year from now or something like that. So anyway, I made up the list of the slides for all of you guys to look at and take a look at, and maybe when we get together on the general session when we do the strategic plan, we can really set some neat goals that'll help. Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Very good.
All right, Mr. Law.
Well, that's kind of like fish out of water. I know a lot about water, but not a lot about electricity. So when I went to these classes, of course, I'm kind of a new guy there, understanding the electric business. So they went over cybersecurity issues, distribution issues that I need to get familiar with. One of the things that I was going to do, I was going to print out this quiz that they had us do and have you all take it to see if you're all up to snuff. But I decided not to do that because Cooper's last year. He's on his way out. Anyway, so for me, one thing they talked about, which I thought was interesting, was I've got to look at the name again. Was the SMRs. What's an SMR? Small modular reactors.
Oh,
yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting because they talked a lot about the nuclear technology. China has one, it's the only one. Anyway, I was really fascinated about that to see how that's going to transition over the next 20, 30 years to see if that's actually going to take effect or not. I found that really interesting. There again, one thing I take away from Atlanta, when I was sitting at lunch with four individuals and I asked about a finance sheet, I decided that was not the right question. And I simply asked, can we take that finance sheet and just talk about the yellow things and not all the clutter that goes with it? I think Mike might have asked that at one time. And I was educated on why we do that as far as transparency to the public.
She was really kind about that. She was very kind.
Absolutely. I believe I said kind.
Okay.
No, but that's kind of stuff that I need to know. And so I appreciate that. It makes total sense to me. I'm not an accountant whatsoever. So to me, it's, you know, it's a little foggy, but I'll get there. Moving on, one more story real quick. I was able to attend the mayor of Mesquite. Had a little question and answer thing at Sun City this morning. I attended that. Anybody live in Sun City? I don't want to upset anybody. Anyway, he had a really good question and answer thing. Might not be a bad idea to maybe tag onto him on some of those, because there were some over-to-power questions that were there. I didn't know enough about it to really get into it, so I just kind of stayed back a little bit. But after the meeting, I had a gentleman that came to one of our board meetings a couple of months ago and asked about solar credits and et cetera. You remember him? I think I told you he was coming. Well, I don't want to get Ozaki too crazy here, but he really, really complimented you. And so I want to give you kudos for that. I don't recall the guy's name, but he said he's talked to you several times about he's going to kick you to June. We come up with some kind of plan on the credit issue. My point to that little story is the professionalism that he said that you deal with him on is extraordinary, I would say, because Sun City residents sometimes are a little bit difficult. I have to deal with those guys quite often with the soccer complex right next to it as the substation is being built. Anyway, I want to tell you thank you for that.
Thank you.
Because he mentioned you in high regard and good communication with you. And I just want to know, as a board member, that they apparently knew that I was. Sun City seems to know a lot. That reflects on the department. And I kind of blend that down from Cooper to you and so on as far as management staff. And so thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I'll end with that. But there again, thank you again. I appreciate that.
Wow.
Good job.
Very good. I attended two classes that were quite awful, and then one that was very good. It was on artificial intelligence, and it was most excellent. So all these big data centers, because I keep wondering, why are they wanting to build these, even in our district? Why are they all looking? Well, number one, in rural areas, of course, because the land is cheaper. And, you know, it was so interesting the way when you query a question that AI goes in and scrapes all the data out of these data centers, good and bad. Mm-hmm. So you really got to be careful, like, you know, putting everything down as gospel truth when it most certainly isn't. But, you know, to have it help you and to straighten speeches up and that sort of thing, wow, it's amazing. It's going to revolutionize. But in answering the question to me is, why are these data centers going up? And it's everywhere, especially in the West. So, anyway.
What were your two crummy classes? What was the name?
Jeez, I've tried to forget them.
Okay. Understood.
Of course, on the good side is Pat Manahan himself taught the AI class. He was very, very versed. And Singletary, he taught the other one. Of course, he's very good as well. So anyway, I just wanted to say that since 2014, I've been able to serve on the NREA board here in Nevada and travel the state with men. It's from Portola to Wells to Boulder City. I mean,
and bless your soul for making it.
And you know, when you got to kill 6 hours on a drive, you talk about family, you talk about industry, you know. And I have learned to appreciate his steady hand and leadership in this industry. He's been amazing. So I just want to thank him as well for the great leadership that he has entrusted this company with as he leaves.
Thank you.
Approval of the next board meeting.
Wait a minute. I went to school too.
Oh, sorry. Now, can I time you?
I attended a cybersecurity class. I only took one class. And, you know, there were a lot of things in there that we discussed. And we do so many of the trainings and those type of things. And we just have to be very vigilant as we do those things and continue the vigilance. You know, most of it's just clicking on an errant email. And we just
that
have
comes
to be,
from our attorney.
We have to be vigilant of that. We have to stay aware. There's always something out there that we don't know about that's happening. It's happening to somebody. We need to be very vigilant of that. And so, you know, I've got some questions I want to ask Scott when he comes back, and we'll deal with that. But I wanted to also address my Amanda, since he's leaving. You know, my friendship, Amanda and I have been best friends for 60 years. Mm. And we've camped together, you know, through Boy Scouts, same tent, hit bring the steaks. I'd make a banana cream pie. You know, food was always very important to us. We've been on the football team together, the wrestling team. Since he went to BYU and got married, I was his best man. Traveled to Canada with him, to Cardston, up to Edmonton. You know, I've stayed at the Rabbit Hutches and went to the football games at BYU. But we've been best friends, and it's just been a wonderful opportunity to work with him, you know, for 40-plus years as I worked with him and now on the board. And he's a man of honesty and integrity and always looks to the people around him to improve their situation and for the customers of OPD to make them the priority as we make these decisions. But the customer, we're always customer-focused as we deal with OPD. And I just want to tell him how much I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich.
Most dads. Thank you.
Chad, can I say something?
Shoot.
I just want to thank Mendes for giving us that report. It gave me a lot of things that I know I need to be aware of and to think about for the future. We got a lot of work to do, but it was also wonderful for me to reflect on what we've done in the past, and especially to acknowledge everything that Mendes has done. He started out in a pretty bad spot, and I feel like he made changes and guided the board, I know that, guided the staff to where we're in a great position right now. I feel like it's been fun for the last few years to be on the board, because like everything we did was just good. Like, we're making so much headway. Anyway, I feel like it's been a privilege to work with you, and I hope you can always, well, I feel like you should really hold your head high. You've had an amazing career.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you.
You've made my job more boring, of course. Prior general managers, the philosophy was do whatever they wanted and then call me and get them out of trouble. Right?
That's true.
His philosophy has been totally different. It's been call Byron in advance, make sure I'm doing it the right way to start so that I don't get in trouble. Wait, just not even near as much fun as before, but that's how you should run your company, too, and it's kept us out of trouble since Mendes has been in as general manager. So, he does it right.
The OPD5 way.
The OPD5 way.
Okay, now... approval for the next board meeting on April 16th.
Jeff, there may be a change of venue.
Is that due to the construction?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it may be held in Overton. That's to be determined.
So either or, Overton or Mesquite.
I'm going to say probably Overton.
Oh. Do you just want to change it to Overton now?
It's up to you. That's fine.
If Mesquite's ready, let's have it in Mesquite. Okay. If it's not, we'll...
Mm-hmm. So Becky will let us know when she calls us.
Yeah.
Is that
good? Be determined.
Okay. We'll go with that. Anyway, motion?
I'll make a motion to the next board meeting, Wednesday, April 16th, in either preferably Mesquite, but if it's not available, Overton Boardroom.
Second.
3 p.m.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Everybody in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anybody? Any opposition? Any?
Opposed.
Opposed. Okay, is there an executive session?
Mr. Chair, I would like to request an executive session.
Oh, dear.
All right. Could we please give me a 2-minute break while you guys take a picture before we go into executive session? Because I really need a 2-minute break.
I really need to have that break as well.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
Can we have a 2-minute break for your picture?
Sure.
Oh, thank you.
No snacks. Just a break.
Okay.